Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. Huh. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. Feel alright. I feel alright tonight. And I'll bring you precious contraband and ancient tales from this.
Oh. Right, all right, all right. Good morning, everyone. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here on Wacker Drive until 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude every weekday morning from 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. It is Wednesday. That means Wildcard Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wildcard Wednesday. Any artist, any song, anything, get your requests in now. We'll play them later. That's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Also because it is a Wednesday, we'll be playing another round of Know Your Onion. Tom is your host for Know Your Onion. We'll get two different callers on the line. They will each play around singularly. And then the idea here is Tom will read you a news headline. And you have to decide whether it's real or whether it's not real. And it's from the satirical comedy newspaper, The Onion. So you have to know whether it's real or The Onion, and it gets difficult nowadays because the news is so absolutely crazy. The real news is so absolutely crazy that it's hard to tell between a real headline and an Onion headline. So Know Your Onion. You'll have a chance to win some prizes and have some fun telling the difference between a real news headline and an Onion headline in another round of Know Your Onion, which we do after the 4:30 news every Wednesday morning. So that's coming up. Also coming up, lots of fun stuff happening at the Music Box Theater, celebrating their 90 years being open, 90th anniversary of the Music Box Theater. They've been doing some special stuff. Yesterday morning on the show, we had the great Andy Davis on, who is the director of The Fugitive, and they're showing The Fugitive this week at the Music Box. Andy's going to be there. And also coming up this Sunday night, they are showing a really terrific, crazy horror satire cult movie called Society, which is actually one of the most requested movies that the Music Box gets to be shown. It is a crazy movie, and if you haven't seen it, it's awesome. It's a great satire. It's gross, and it's one of the what we call the subgenre of horror movies, the body horror movie, where there's all kinds of gross, crazy special effects, and I love those kind of movies. And in fact, a little bit later on, after we talk to our guest, we're going to jump into that category of the best and craziest and most awesome body horror movies of all time. But Brian Usna is the director of that film, of Society, and it rarely gets shown, and he's bringing his personal 35mm print of the movie to be shown. And it's shown Sunday night, August 25th at 7 o'clock at the beautiful Music Box Theater. And you really need to go out and see this movie. If you're a horror film fan, if you're a body horror film fan, if you're a satire fan, if you're a fan of 80s movies that are under the radar, this fits that bill all the way through. It is a terrific, crazy, insane movie. And Brian's going to be there. The director of the movie is going to be there to answer all the questions and introduce it. It's his personal, his 35mm print will be shown. And again, it's this Sunday at Music Box Theater at 7 o'clock. The crazy, awesome horror movie, Society. He worked on Reanimator and From Beyond and Dagon with the great Stuart Gordon. He directed the Reanimator sequels. He directed Return of the Living Dead Part 3. He co-created Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. This is a guy who's been in the business a long time, specializes in horror, and is really a terrific guy. And I'm very excited. I've never spoken to him. I've spoken to his partner, Stuart Gordon, many times. Stuart's from Chicago, and he's fantastic. I can't wait to speak with Brian about his great movie, Society, which he'll be showing this Sunday night. And that's coming up right after we break here in just a couple of minutes. And because of that, like I said, we're going to be talking about some of the best and craziest body horror movies. Also, today in history, Hawaii becomes our 50th state. So we'll talk about that. We're going to talk about some weird facts and great things about Hawaii. And we were talking about this. We were going to talk about this yesterday. We ran out of time. But in addition to Hawaii, there are 49 other states, and they have been ranked as the friendliest. Which states are the friendliest? So we want to see which ones are the friendliest. And we've got more coming up here. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text and your wildcard Wednesday requests. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page. Facebook.com/Nick D Show. And also, subscribe to our podcast. It's free. Every single second of every single show is podcast. If you can't listen in the middle of the morning here, late at night, in the middle of the morning, just subscribe. It's free. It'll automatically be sent to your device, and you can listen at your leisure, bro. All right, let me say hello to my great producer, Tom Hush. Tom, how are you, man?
I'm great, Nick. How are you?
I'm good. I'm excited. I've never spoken with Brian Usna before.
Yeah, he's, you know, we've gotten the chance to talk via email. He seems really excited to be here.
Yeah.
You know, he's a legendary producer, especially in horror, so
yeah.
It's going to be great.
It's going to be really cool. And I've, you know, Stuart's been on the show. Stuart Gordon's been on the show a bunch of times. And obviously, I knew him way back in the day when he was doing theater here in Chicago. Groundbreaking theater artist here in this city, and then like obviously broke through massively with Reanimator, which is one of the greatest and craziest horror movies. You want to talk about body horror movies, there's another
one. Yeah, he does an awesome, the copy of Reanimator I have, he does an awesome commentary where he goes through the whole movie, and he's just a delight to listen.
He's a great guy. He's a really, really cool guy, down to earth, awesome guy, full on Chicagoan. But anyway, Brian, his producing partner and director of Society, which is such a crazy movie, is going to be joining us in just a couple of minutes. All right. And in the newsroom is Vic Vaughn. Hi, Vic.
Morning, sir.
How are you, pal?
I'm doing all right.
Hey, Cubs won.
Yeah.
Rizzo had a hell of a night.
Yeah, I was watching some of that.
Yeah, 3-for-3. Walk.
Bang,
three RBIs.
You knew that was
two
gone
homers.
As soon as he hit it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Nice night. And you know what? He did it for his mom's birthday.
Oh, nice.
Yep, it was yesterday.
Two of them. Wow.
Yesterday was his mom's birthday.
Oh, that's cool.
And, yeah, so, no, that was fun. That was fun to see the Cubs win the game. Still in first place because, well, St. Louis is playing Milwaukee at the moment, and I'd heard Milwaukee was killing him. I'm sorry, other way around. I thought St. Louis was way on top. But we want them both to lose if that's possible.
Yeah, it looks like the Cardinals beat them.
Cardinals beat them? Okay. If it's possible for both teams to lose, I would enjoy that. So, there you go. All right, Vic, you're in the newsroom all morning long. Tom is producing. I am your host. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Brian Usna, director of the crazy movie Society, which is being shown at the Music Box on Sunday, is going to join us. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline Studio here on 720 WGN, and we're here until 5 a.m. It's Wednesday. Wildcard Wednesday. Get your requests in now. It's any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. A little bit later on, we're going to be talking about this is today in history. Hawaii becomes the 50th state. So we're going to talk a little bit about Hawaii, and we also didn't have time to talk about it yesterday, but we're going to talk about the friendliest states in America ranked, and we'll tell you where Illinois is, and we'll tell you where Hawaii is, in fact, on that list. And we got much more going on. We have another round of Know Your Onion coming up. That's where you have to tell the difference between a real news headline and a news headline from The Onion, and you'll win some prizes if you can do that, and it gets more difficult by the day to tell the difference between an Onion satirical headline and a real headline nowadays. So we'll do that a little bit later on as well. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text, and there you go. I'm very excited to welcome to the show my guest this morning, Brian Usna, who is a producer, director, writer of films, and particularly in the horror genre, has worked with the great Stuart Gordon, a good friend of ours here, and has been on the show many times. And they've been responsible for some classic movies. Well, one of his classics is being screened at the Music Box Theater on Sunday. Sunday, August 25th, Music Box Theater at 7 p.m. It is a terrific film called Society. And this is his personal 35mm print that he's bringing along and showing to the audience. And so it's going to be he's going to be there, too. So Brian Usna, who created the movie Society, will be there. And this is one of those movies that has been requested by horror fans all over the place to be screened on, you know, to be seen on the big screen. And so the Music Box Theater is going to do that, and Brian's going to be there. And let's welcome Brian to the show. Brian, welcome, sir.
Hi, thanks.
How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm good. Good, good, good. Well, congratulations on having this shown at the Music Box. Have you ever been to the Music Box Theater, Brian?
No, I haven't, but I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place. It's a classic, old, beautiful palace, and there aren't many of them left in this city or in the country. And this is one of the best ones, and you'll really love it. They love film there, and it's going to be fun.
Well, I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about. Well, first of all, you know, when you got to Hollywood, you moved in LA in the '80s, and you started making. You were looking to start to make movies, and you hooked up with. You met Stuart Gordon. Stuart Gordon, who, of course, has a great reputation here in the city, starting Organic Theater Company and working here for such a long time. And he's a great guy. How did that partnership begin? How did you meet Stuart?
Well, when I went to L.A., of course, I didn't have any preparation to make movies. And so I put an ad in the Variety Weekly, a little like 1-inch that said, horror movie director wanted. And I got a ton of replies. This is back in the day when people actually had to type or write the replies.
Right.
And I met a guy named Bob Greenberg. And Bob Greenberg had gone to USC and knew everybody in Hollywood. And he became kind of my guide. And Bob was from Chicago. And at one point, I was looking for a director for a horror movie. And he said, well, you know, you really should meet Stuart Gordon. He hasn't ever done a movie, but I know you guys are going to get along. And so I went to Chicago. I think it was over Thanksgiving in 83. And I went and saw a couple of, Stuart's plays. One was something that was already a success, and it was called ER.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one was a play that never really went anywhere. I think it was called Assembly Line, and that was at the Organic. And they put on the play, and then afterwards, Stuart got up and asked the audience what they thought of it. And, of course, the audience was used to this. This is, I guess, the Organic had quite a regular audience.
Yeah.
And they were very honest about what they thought. And I was watching and thinking, and Stuart, it never fazed him. He dealt with everything just as it came to him. He didn't get defensive. It's not like everybody said terrible things about it, but, you know, usually people are rather tender about stuff like that. And I was impressed. I thought, wow, this guy listens. And you took notes, and you could see he was going to take the response and use what he could. And afterwards, I went to his apartment, and Carolyn made us dinner, and we sat there and talked about horror movies.
Mm.
And one of the things he talked about was that he had a script for Reanimator, the Lovecraft story, and it was for a kind of a pilot of a TV show. It was a 50-page script, and I loved the idea, but I didn't want to make a. I wanted to do a movie, so I said, "Well, listen, if you want to develop it into a movie, then let's do it." And that's how it started. And we, I think, it, exactly 1 year later. The Monday after Thanksgiving in 84, we began production. Mm. So it went pretty quick, and Stuart and I don't know, we just really got along. We had the same, we're totally different, but we have, you know, we both liked horror, and Stuart was just such a good storyteller. So when we made the movie, I mean, we were both, you know, kind of amateurs going in. Of course, everybody else was a professional.
Yeah.
But Stuart, you know, so people were surprised when the movie came out because it was so good. And I always say that, well, one reason is that Stuart was already like an 11-year veteran of directing before he made a movie.
Mm-hmm.
So people look at it and say, God, that was his first movie. And I say, Yeah, but this guy knows how to tell stories with actors. And that's what I always thought his greatest talent was. That's what really separated him from most, is that he just knows how to tell a story.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we really, we made a few really good movies, and he was certainly one of the people I most liked to collaborate with.
Yeah, he you know, being a native Chicagoan, Brian, I was familiar with his work at Organic and his theater work and for a long time. And a lot of us here in Chicago, I've been reviewing movies for a very long time here at the station. In fact, back in I started officially working with Roy Leonard, who was once on this radio station, in 1985, the year that Reanimator came out. And
there you go.
And I will never forget the critic screening of it. It was, there were about 40 of us in the screening room. Some of us familiar with Stewart's work on the stage, and I just was completely annihilated. I'm a horror fanatic, Brian. You should know that.
Oh, good. And you're the right guy for this job.
And we just sat there and laughed and had a great time, and I had rarely seen a movie that was that outrageous, that went to places that not a lot of movies go, with such maniacal glee. And it's truly I love all the Reanimator movies, but the first one is just one of those landmark movies in horror cinema that just for me came out of nowhere. And what the reception that the movie received, how did that go over with you guys?
It got a great reception.
Yeah.
You know, I think it was even on a couple top 10 lists.
Yeah, it was on mine. It was on mine. Yeah.
This is like a really super low budget horror movie.
Yeah.
That I didn't even bother to send it in to get it rated.
Right.
Because I figured they would cut all the good stuff out. You know? And of course they would have.
Right.
But it was the first screening of the movie was actually at the Cannes Film Market in May of 85, and it was at midnight at the Star Theater, and Stewart had sent me the contact for Roger Ebert, who always stayed at at a particular hotel there, and I brought I hand-delivered a invite for the screening. And I was shocked. I didn't know anything about the movie business. I had no background in it, and I went to the screening, and it was raining, and there was lines like all the way down the block outside this Star. And we went in, it was packed. They had to open the next screen, you know. It was a threeplex, and bike the print over when they finished the first reel, they'd take it to the next.
Oh, man.
And at the end of the screening, everybody was like stomping their feet and clapping their hands to the music. And I was like, wow, this movie business is a lot of fun. And of course, I grabbed Ebert and tried to get him to tell me if he liked it. But he wouldn't. He said he had to. He said he never talked before he filed.
Right.
And but of course he gave it a rave. He was a big fan of Stewart's, and we just it was just amazing.
Yeah.
That thing was just kind of, everybody liked it.
I remember Roger was at the screening that we saw it together. So that was his second time seeing it, and you know, there was just such giddy excitement, you know, in the room. And then when the film came out and it got, so, I mean, like, you know, you said, like, Roger gave it 4 stars and just went nuts for it. And it's not the kind of movie that you would expect, you know, the most popular critic in America, one of the two most popular critics in America, to give an absolute rave to. But that's how good a film it is.
Yeah. Well, I think it was also, I think a lot of people, horror fans were especially, you know, I think they had an extra, they kind of were extra liked it because they weren't used to, you know, and I'm a horror fan. And so I know I'm a horror fan because I like any good movie, but right, if it's a horror movie, I even like the bad ones.
Yeah, me too.
You know, that shows you what kind of person you are.
Yeah.
And in horror, we're usually used to, you know, liking stuff that isn't perfect, you know, that's kind of, we dig it because of certain things in it.
Right.
And but this, I think, nobody was really ready for a really good movie.
Right.
That was a hardcore horror movie. It's one thing to have Rosemary's Baby, you know, the Omen, you know, these kinds of big budget, great horror movies, but not something that's just purely exploitative.
Yep.
Just the real deal.
Yep.
And cheap. And super cheap. That movie was shot in 16 days.
Yeah,
you know?
It's amazing.
And I think nobody, it was, you know, you look at something like Evil Dead, which was a cheap movie like that. Well, it was really great, but it was really great for just this mad kind of feeling you got, but it wasn't necessarily a really good movie.
Right,
technically,
right,
or script-wise, or any of that.
Yeah.
It was just the energy behind it.
Right.
But with Reanimator, you kind of go, wow, where did this come from?
Yeah.
And I think the horror fans liked it double because of that.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of, especially in Chicago, I think, as you said, you knew who Stewart was.
Yeah.
And I think the people who knew who he was, it was kind of like going, you see, I knew he was good.
Exactly
I
right.
I knew he was
exactly
good,
right. Brian, you know? Brian, hang on, okay? For a second, hang on.
Yeah.
Brian Usna is with us, and he is the director of a great film called Society, which is being shown at the Music Box Theater this Sunday night, August 25th at 7 o'clock, and it's his personal 35mm print. We'll talk about that and more with Brian right after we break here for the news on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It is Wednesday morning. That means Wild Card Wednesday. Any artist, any song, anything, get your request in now at 312-981-7200. We're going to be talking about Hawaii for specific reasons a little bit later on. And we're also going to be talking about body horror films. Speaking of which, Brian Usna is my guest right now. He's the director of a terrific movie called Society, which is being shown at the Music Box Theater. Very rarely does this film get shown, and in fact, so rare that the director himself, who we're talking to, is bringing his personal 35mm print to the Music Box Theater this Sunday to be shown. And that's Brian Usna, and let's welcome Brian back. Brian, welcome back.
Hi.
Hi. Before we move on, I just want to mention that 1985 was a particularly good movie year for horror, because in addition to Reanimator, Return of the Living Dead came out, and Day of the Dead.
That's right.
And those were three of the greatest sort of undead movies, you know, ever made. And it was just such a good, it was a for zombie fans. It was, you know, it was a treasure trove at that time.
A good time.
Yeah, really good.
Yeah, it's funny because when we had the cast and crew screening for Reanimator, we had it at the Writers Guild Theater. And when it was over, I came up to Dan O'Bannon, who was the writer director of Return to Living Dead.
Yeah,
and as he was coming by, he said, "That's our competition. That's our competition." And I thought, really, could it be?
Yeah, yeah. Now, speaking of Return of the Living Dead, you directed one of the sequels.
I did number three.
Number three, and in fact, I'm a host at a flashback at what we call the Flashback Horror Convention here in Chicago. It's a yearly convention that's 3 days long. Horror fans, you know, all that the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Stewart's done it. Barbara's done it. Jeffrey's done it in the past, and I've done their Q&As and things like that. Well, Melinda Clark was there this year.
Oh, great!
Yeah,
I didn't know that she did those conventions.
Yeah, she had a nice long line, lots of people taking pictures with her and getting autographs, and it was a lot of fun to see her there. She had a really interesting Q&A as well. How did you get involved in Return of the Living Dead 3?
Well, it's kind of a long story, but ultimately the company that ended up with the rights, Trimark, I had actually gone to them because I was working with some people that thought they had the rights.
Oh.
And I went to them to look for financing, and then it turned out that they didn't have the rights, and then Trimark ended up with them and called me and said, "Listen, if you're still willing to, if you're still interested, come on over." And so I went to see them, and they said, "Do you want to?" You know, by that time the second one had kind of tanked; it didn't work.
Yeah,
and so this one didn't have such high expectations. So I guess that's why they allowed me to do it. And so they said, well, let's do it. Let's find a, you know, so let's find a writer. And so we just went through the process of kind of interviewing writers and kind of developing the story and move forward that way.
Yeah, it's I really like I like Return of the Living Dead three or a lot. I think it's really terrific. You know, you mentioned earlier that you are just a big time horror fan, just like me. What got you into it? There's always some sort of story about how someone becomes a big fan of horror. How did that happen for you?
I don't know. I think that I always feel like it's kind of like an infection that people get. It's kind of like a drug, you know.
Yeah,
the first
yeah.
time makes you sick, and then after a while, you're just chasing the dragon. And I think people who are like, you know, 11 to 20 something, well, especially adolescents, they all like horror.
Yeah,
because that's who it's for. It's all about, you know, their body changes and blood and sex and death and all that kind of thing. But then when you start running into people that are like 30 years old,
right,
and 40 years old, and they're still like horror, you kind of got to raise your eyebrows and say, what, you know, you know, what's going on here? And I think usually they saw something very early or had some kind of, you know, horror experience that, that kind of got him into it. And for me, it's not that simple. Of course, it's not just movies. It can be, you know, ghost stories, camping. It can be, you know, that type of thing. But for me, the movie that got me when I was about, I think I must have been 7 years old or something, I saw The Creature with the Atom Brain at a kiddie matinee. I grew up in Panama. And it just, you know, kept me from sleep for nights. I was, you know, I had nightmares. It was so extreme. And then, of course, then I saw, I think it was the Seventh Voyage of Sinbad, where they had the woman turning into the snake and the skeleton fighting.
Right.
And then then I remember when I finally saw House on Haunted Hill, I was a little older.
Yeah.
And that was a movie for kids like me. We just had a blast. And then you started realizing horror was like fun. It was fun to have that thrill. I think I always think it's like a you know, a roller coaster ride or something. You know, kids who go on the roller coaster when they're very young, it scares the heck out of them. But as they get older, they keep trying to get that thrill.
Right.
And I think with horror, you do the same thing. And then after a while, you just start really enjoying and appreciating the craft of it,
yeah,
how it's done, how it's made. And you, anything is like that. So I still really enjoy horror, and I really like I like the genre.
Yeah, it's my favorite genre. And for me personally, it was creature features late at night on TV with the Universal films, the old Universal.
Yeah, those are great.
And then, but it all kind of changed when I saw the Hammer movies. When the Hammer movies, all that Technicolor and the blood.
Because, well, they had red blood and they had bare breast.
Exactly.
And,
that's
wow,
exactly,
you know, that was
right.
That's so scary, you know.
Yeah. Absolutely. Now, I want to get to Society. We have to talk about Society because that's the movie you're coming to town for to screen, and we're all excited about it because it's such a terrific movie. But, you know, you work on From Beyond, you do Reanimator, you're doing these horror films, and then suddenly you and Stewart write Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. How does that happen? Which is a film that I love, and how does that happen?
Well, we had done Reanimator and From Beyond, and we were in we were having a barbecue at my house in my backyard, and we both had kids, and we were sitting there watching the kids, and Stuart said, you know, we should make a movie for our kids because, you know, they can't look at this stuff. And I said, well, you know, when I was a kid, I used to just kind of get my little guys and go in the grass and look real close up and imagine riding an ant and a beetle and a bee. And it was just so dramatic, the grass itself. And Stewart said, well, that's a great idea. The father shrinks some. They throw him out. Within like 40 minutes, we had come up with the whole story. And then Stewart said, we got to take it to Disney, and we should get Fred McMurray in it, because we were both the fans of the old, you know, the absent-minded professor and the shaggy dog.
Yeah.
And, you know, those kind of 50, well, I guess 60s. Disney things. And believe it or not, we were in Rome. You know, we made Dolls and From Beyond in Rome.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like January or something of, I forget what year that would have been. And 86, I guess. And Stewart had coming out of theater and everything, he had a really good agent in Hollywood already. And he got us a meeting at Disney. And so on the plane from Rome to L.A., we sat in the back. Back then, the planes weren't all full, you know. And we sat in the back, and on a legal pad, we wrote out the story. And then we had a meeting at Disney, and within a couple weeks, they said they wanted to do it. And next thing you know, we're meeting with Katzenberg, and boom, boom, boom.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really great.
Wow, that's a great story. That is a great story. And then it turned out to be a huge hit for Disney. And
it was the biggest hit they had had at that. They needed it, because at that time they were going to split Disney up. If you remember, Disney, they were going to separate the theme parks and the movie thing and the animation. You know, it was going to be broken up and sold off.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. And that was before they now they dominate the entire universe. So
yeah, absolutely.
They own everything.
Yeah, they're big brother.
Yes. Brian, hang on, okay?
Sure.
All right, Brian Usna is with us. He is a producer, writer, and director. His film from 1989, Society, which is very rarely screened, is going to be screened on Sunday night at the beautiful Music Box Theater, and it is Brian's personal 35mm print. So you need to go and check out musicboxtheater.com for this special screening of Society with Brian in-house. We'll come back and talk more about this coming up right after this on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. It's a Wednesday morning here. We are live in the Skyline Studio here, the WGN Skyline Studio, and we're here until 5 a.m. It's a Wednesday morning, and Wildcard Wednesday, get your request in now, or any artist, any story, any song, anything, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. My guest right now is Brian Usna, a filmmaker, a writer, a director, a producer. His film, Society, is being shown at the Music Box as part of the Music Box of Horrors, and, you know, they're doing a bunch of really cool things for the 90th anniversary of the Music Box Theater. It's been around for 90 years, and they're going to do a great year full of really cool and special events. And this is one of them. Brian's going to be there live. It's his own 35mm print of a terrific horror film, Society. And it's this Sunday night at 7 o'clock at the Music Box Theater, and we welcome Brian back. Brian, welcome back.
Thank you.
Let's talk about the film that you're going to be showing here on Sunday night in Chicago, Society. How did this one come to you?
Well, this was a movie that a couple of guys gave me the script, and I had a deal with a friend who was starting up a company and was going to make these independent movies, and I liked it. I had been working for a year with Dan O'Bannon in very strange circumstances on a very paranoid script called The Men, which was about a woman that discovers all men are aliens. And when we finally got Dan was going to direct it, and when we finally got the financing kind of together, Dan backed out. He was a rather mercurial person. And at that point, it was very disappointing, and I moved on, and about a month or two later, I got this script, and I read it, and it had the same paranoia that I had been living with.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was so, and I thought, got to do this. And the only thing was, it wasn't very fantastical, and I'm a kind of guy, I just love all the the fantasy stuff.
Yeah.
You know, we were talking about Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, and I always tell people, well, you know, fantasy, you just change the lighting a little darker, and it's a horror movie.
Right.
Honey, I Shrunk the Kids could be very easily a horror movie. It just wouldn't have a happy ending.
Right.
And you'd change the lighting a little bit. So with Society, I was, you know, I like the fantastical stuff, and I've always been a fan of surrealism and things like that. And so I kind of adapted the script so that it had a fantastical element to it. And I worked with Screaming Mad George, who's just one of the most...
Oh, man.
Just one of the most imaginative effects guys that I've ever met
yeah.
in Hollywood.
Yeah.
And I think it's the best... I mean, it's his best work. You know, for Screaming Mad George, it's... the best stuff he's ever done.
Yeah.
And because I was working with my friends, we just did whatever we wanted. And the movie is very unique. And it was not a big hit when it came out, not in this country.
Yeah.
And I was very disappointed. But in England, France, Italy, Spain, it was. Of course, back then, pre-internet, you didn't really know that much.
Right.
But then about 10, 15 years ago, all of a sudden in the U.S. and around the world, all of a sudden I started getting a lot of inquiries about it.
Yeah.
And now it's been kind of rediscovered, and partly because there's a big appreciation now for 80s genre
sure.
movies.
Yeah.
There's a real, you know, people are looking back to before the digital age and going, hey, there was something that was good about that.
Yeah.
So there's that. But the other thing is I think it really is, it seems really about today.
Yes,
in
it does.
A lot of ways.
Yes,
and yes, it is an old movie, and it is a cheap movie, and it's not a perfect movie.
Yeah.
But I will guarantee anybody who goes to it, they will get their money's worth.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no,
just
no.
Just hang
they...
in there.
No, no.
And it will give you something you've never seen in a movie, and you will not be sorry you went.
No, the payoff is massive, Brian. Let me
yeah.
just say that. And you know, the film was made at the end of the Reagan era, beginning of the first Bush
exactly.
era. And that's, you know, throughout the whole thing. But the thing about it is, if you watch it now, it's as timely now as it was back then. And boy, the effects and the body horror stuff is amazing. It's, you know, we're going to be talking about the best body horror movies coming up after we say goodnight to you. And this is up there. So what do you think about now? Because I love beautiful, old, fantastic practical effects. They just, mm-hmm. they make me happy. And when I see that, I mean, like, I could watch John Carpenter's The Thing and look at Rob Bottin's
yeah.
effects
yeah.
and go, that's as good now as it was in 1982.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about the way that has changed and everything is CGI now?
Well, I think there's a look back now. I think people are starting to realize that CGI is not the magic pill.
Right.
You know? I think the height of CGI, I think one of the reasons why superhero movies are kind of the movies of our era is because they are the ones that can take the most advantage of CGI.
Yeah.
But I think when movies started doing everything CGI, I mean, now if they want a blood splatter on the wall, they do it CGI.
Right.
There's a kind of an animated feeling to
right.
it. And if you don't have a ton of money for CGI, and I mean a lot, it really is hard to get it to really get past that animation feeling.
Mm-hmm.
One example I always give in horror is when The Mummy, the first remake of The Mummy, I don't know, when was that?
99, yeah.
Yeah. And I remember Arnold Vosloo was The Mummy.
Yep.
And at one point, his whole mouth and chin and everything are all kind of decayed or kind of torn back.
Yeah.
And it was the kind of effect that generally would have been kind of censored. But because it was CGI, it was a PG-13.
Right.
And one reason, when I looked at it, I said, why is that okay? Well, it was okay because it wasn't very, it didn't really get you.
Mm-hmm.
Because subconsciously, I think you kind of read it for what it is. Whereas if you just took a rubber face and pulled that out and put real red liquid and stuff, it would not be acceptable. It would be, you know, kind of horror. And I think there's something real about puppets. And I can take a good effects guy can put his hand in a sock and bring it to life.
Yeah.
Puppets are real. Miniatures, mechanical effects. Now, CGI, I think, is really, really good for erasing wires and hiding rods, you know, having green rods and enhancing. It's so hard to have a mechanical kind of monster. The eyes, the teeth, all the little movements don't work.
Yeah.
But with CGI, you can bring those to life. So I'm not against it at all. I just think you need to go for the punch.
I agree with you. There are times when CGI is used brilliantly. I think one of the movies that uses CGI, like you said, to get rid of wires and to do those things, everything else is practical. One of the most insane movies, one of my favorite movies of all time, which is Mad Max Fury Road, which those cars were real. The stunts were real. They were on harnesses, and they got rid of some of the harnesses, they got rid of the wires, but everything you're seeing on that screen was real, but the CGI made it more effective. And that, I think, is exactly what you're talking
exactly.
about.
Exactly. Well, it's when you watch, what was that, Indiana Jones number 4 or 5 or whatever.
With the fourth one,
Where they tried to repeat kind of like the truck gag.
Yes, yes.
Certain things. And you're watching the truck gag and see him crawl around the truck while it's racing down the road, and it doesn't do anything for you.
Yeah.
Because you see that they're in a stage with the background being a fake background and all this kind of stuff. But when you watch the original one, you're like so excited because somebody's really doing that.
Yeah, exactly.
They're really crawling over that truck.
Yeah.
And I think even in the superhero movies, for me, so much of the time, the images of the sci-fi images are so wonderful, but so much of the time the scene is a couple people talking with this incredible background.
Right.
And you just realize that it's just people with a background. And I think subconsciously that a lot of people kind of get that in a subconscious way. They go, hey, this isn't, I watch an old movie and there's something about it that gets me more. It affects me more.
Yep.
And I think it's that puppetry, the manipulation of real things.
Yeah.
Something to be said for that.
There is, and it's on display beautifully in Society, which is a terrific movie that still holds up. And it's your own personal 35mm print. How great
is
how
and
great
I should
is that?
Say one thing. Yeah. I should say one thing. There's the biggest movie magazine in the UK is called Empire. I'm sure you know about it. Most people don't. It's a big, glossy, great movie magazine. And a few years ago, they had a countdown of the top 50 grossest scenes in film history. Number one was the shunning from Society, and I was very proud of that.
Well, congratulations.
So just tell your audience
there
that
you
way.
Go.
Anybody
There's
who's, it. Listen, anybody who's awake at this time, they should go to Society.
I think that sums it up. Yeah, it's great. If you're a horror movie fan, a body horror fan, there's a huge payoff. It's also a funny film and a great social satire as well. It's a great movie. And to see it on the 35mm print at the beautiful Music Box Theater with Brian in-house, it's a special night. And it's this Sunday, August 25th at 7 o'clock. Brian, what a joy it was to talk to you. A real pleasure.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Absolutely, Brian. Have fun in Chicago.
Thanks a lot.
There you go. Brian Usna, everybody. Producer, writer, director, has been associated with some of the greatest horror movies. Society. If you've never seen it, and a lot of you haven't, you should definitely get out and see it, especially if you're a body horror fan, if you're a practical gore effects fan, if you like things that are weird and things that are really clever, you got to check out Society. And it's Brian Usna's personal 35mm print, and it's Sunday night at the Music Box Theater at 7 o'clock. So check it out. All right, we're going to break here on 720 WGN.
There's antimony, arsenic, aluminum, selenium, and hydrogen, and oxygen, and nitrogen, and rhenium, and nickel, neodymium, neptunium, germanium, and iron, americium, ruthenium, uranium, europium, zirconium, lutetium, vanadium, and lanthanum, and osmium, and astatine, and radium, and gold, protactinium, and indium, and gallium. and iodine and thorium and thulium and thallium. There's yttrium, ytterbium, actinium, rubidium, and boron, gadolinium, niobium.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here at WGN, and we're here until 5 a.m. And, yeah. So, it's Nick DiGilio. It is Wildcard Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wildcard Wednesday. Get your requests in now. Any artist, any song, anything. And that was our first one of the morning. And who requested that?
It's coming to us from our friend Dave in Monroe, the Element song.
Right. I remember hearing that several times as a child. I haven't heard it in years. But there you go. All right. That's the idea there for Wildcard Wednesday. Anything, any song, 312-981-7200. Hey, welcome back, everybody. We're here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 has your morning drive. If you want to hang out with us on Twitter, follow us at Nick D Show, at Nick D Show on Twitter, and also on Facebook at facebook.com/Nick D Show. Okay, we were just talking with Brian Usna, and that was so much fun to talk to him. He was great, and his crazy movie Society is being shown at the Beautiful Music Box Theater as part of their 90th anniversary celebration. They're doing a lot of really cool things over there. And it's his own 35mm print, and he's showing it. And it falls under the subcategory of body horror movies. And these are very specific movies. And I've got here an article where they're talking about 25 body horror movies that make our bones hurt. And this was Sci-Fi put this together, the Sci-Fi channel, sci-fi.com. And this is their explanation of what body horror is. And if you want to jump in here with your favorite or maybe the weirdest or maybe the grossest body horror movies, these usually involve crazy special effects and weirdness that happens to the body. And these are the kind of movies that usually make you uncomfortable in very major ways. And Society is one of those movies. It's terrific, by the way. And so... We thought we would do the subgenre of body horror movies, and we would love to hear from all you weirdos out there who are listening who love these kinds of movies, as I do, and I know Tom does as well. So our phone lines and text lines are open right now for body horror, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Here's their explanation. When it comes to some of the most gruesome and downright terrifying movies out there, body horror has to be one of the hardest to swallow. Rife with gore, mutations, torture, and fates worse than death, the genre is not for the faint of heart. But if you're looking for some of the best of them out there on the market, we've got 25 heart-stopping movies perfect for a night of exploring the best of the best. This is a menagerie of morbidity, stemming from the horrible ways the human body can be abused. It's going to be pretty wicked, but don't say we didn't warn you. So I've not perused this article, but I'm assuming there has to be multiple David Cronenberg movies.
Oh, yeah.
As part of this.
He's one of the early kings of the genre.
Oh, I think he's
if not
I
the
think
king.
He's the king of yeah. of the genre. The horror in most of his movies comes from within the body, and you know, and he's made some masterful movies in that regard. Now he's gone on to do different stuff. Now he's more of an art house director, you know, who's gotten critical acclaim, and doesn't do as many of these body horror films. What was his last movie, Cosmopolis?
I'm gonna take it. That was, I want to say, maybe 2012, or maybe I'm pushing it back too far.
I don't know what his last movie was, but I loved Cosmopolis. That was when you combine Don DeLillo, who's one of my favorite writers of all time, with David Cronenberg was one of my favorite directors of all time, and of course the now great but wasn't great back in 2008 Robert Pattinson.
He had Maps to the Stars in 2014.
Oh, God, I love that movie. Like, five people saw that movie.
Well, and I love his kind of trilogy he did with Viggo Mortensen.
Yeah.
History of Violence, Eastern Promises, and A Dangerous Method.
Right.
Which are all amazing. And then he turns to his new star, Robert Pattinson.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting.
Well, History of Violence, of that three, History of Violence is my favorite. I mean, I like all three of them very, very much, but History of Violence is one of my favorites, and it's in fact one of my favorite Cronenberg movies ever. But yeah, I mean, that was his. You know, you that was one of the things that you could tell about a Cronenberg movie. There was always going to be some sort of horrifying thing that has something to do with the body. He was a medical student, Cronenberg, and at first he wanted to be a doctor. So it explains his fascination with all of those things. But yeah, but I mean, he stopped doing those things. What was his last sort of body horror movie? Because before, you know,
I'd say Existence.
Existence. Yeah.
Existence.
Existence is, what did he do after that?
After that, it says here on his IMDb, he's got a movie called Spider.
Oh, great movie.
Yeah, I've never even heard of this.
Ralph Fiennes, a great movie. I think number one or number two on my list the year it came out.
Yeah, 2002.
Miranda Richardson, Ralph Fiennes. Extraordinary movie.
Gabriel Byrne, who's always fantastic.
Yeah, and that's a psychological thriller.
Yeah.
Not a body horror movie.
And it seems that's where he makes his transition, because then he follows it up with History of Violence.
Right. So, so Existence was his last sort of body horror movie, and one of his best. That is a woefully underrated movie, Existence. Jude Law, Jennifer Jason Leigh. It plays like, if you're a fan of Cronenberg stuff, you've seen Existence?
Yeah.
It plays like Cronenberg's greatest hits. It's like all of the stuff that you loved about all of his previous movies and the ideas that he had explored before and kind of the weird effects and the body stuff. It's all in there. It's all in there.
And it's now 20 years old, and it's one of those movies that is starting to get the reevaluation.
It was one of those movies, because 1999 is considered to be one of the best years in film history. There have been articles written about it. We've talked about it, about how many unbelievable movies came out in 1999. It truly is one of the banner years in film history. And I count Existence among the top. A lot of people wouldn't, because it was, you know, made about a buck. Nobody really saw it, but it's a really great film. And it holds up against the other great films of 99, which included, you know, of course, Fight Club and Magnolia and The Matrix, and I mean, just like, that was an unbelievable year.
Well, and the number of 20th anniversary screenings at a lot of these movies of 99.
Well, speaking of which,
oh yeah,
they're re-releasing The Matrix starting next week, at the end of August through the beginning of September, for 1 week only, for the 20th anniversary of The Matrix. And they're re-releasing it remastered, when it's only going to play in the Dolby theaters at AMC. I've already got my tickets.
I got it. I have to get them.
You've never seen it on the big screen.
Yeah, I'm panicking, because this was like a cultural touchstone of everybody growing up, in the new millennium. Everything was referencing The Matrix. Everything was punning on The Matrix.
Oh, yeah.
I have to see it in all its glory.
You got to see it on the big screen. If you've never seen it on the big screen, you have to. And I've seen it on the big screen several times. But as soon as I heard that they were re-releasing it and they were going to show it in the Dolby Cinemas. And by the way, the Dolby Cinemas at AMC are great. They're great. The projection is amazing. The sound is unbelievable. And if you have the option, and I've said this, I'm not, you know, one of these guys who, you know, like, everything comes out and you can see it in 3D. You can see it in this, or you can see it in that. And you're going to bump up the price $2, $3, $4. If you have the option to see a movie in the Dolby Theater at the AMC, do it. Just do it. Throw the extra bucks down and do it. Especially a movie like The Matrix. I mean, you know, and then, of course, Music Box is going to show it in 35 millimeter. So now I got to see it twice next week, because I have to see it in the Dolby. I have to see it in the Dolby Theater. There's no way I'm missing The Matrix back on the big screen in the Dolby Theater, because it's one of the greatest movies ever. And was meant to be seen in a theater like the AMC Dolby Cinemas. But then, of course, the Music Box, all those cool people over at the Music Box go, yeah, you know what? We're also going to show it in 35 millimeter in the big theater at the Music Box. So that means now I got to go see it again. Not a gotta. Any excuse to watch The Matrix is a good excuse. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. One of the most groundbreaking movies ever made. One of the coolest movies ever. It changed. It's truly one of those films that changed movies. It literally changed cinema for the better and for the cooler. And for them on the 20th anniversary to release it exclusively at the AMC Dolby Cinemas, that's pretty badass. I'm going to see it at the Dolby Cinema in Skokie, but there's one at the River East. There's one in Rosemont. There's one. I mean, there are about 10 or 12. city and suburban AMC theaters that have the Dolby Cinema. Check it out. And I can't recommend seeing The Matrix in these state-of-the-art, incredible cinemas more. So, but yeah, that's from 20 years ago, and so is Existence. And it would be nice if someone, you know, maybe I should get in the ear over at the guys at the Music Box and say, hey, listen, it's the 20th anniversary of Existence, which is one of Cronenberg's best movies. Get a print of it and show it. I'm sure the print is in pristine condition, because it was out for 5 minutes and nobody went to see it. So it's not like it was, you know, threaded and went through a projector a bunch of times, because it didn't.
If there's a 35 millimeter print of Society out there,
yeah, well,
there's got to be a 35 millimeter of.
Well, the 35 millimeter print of Society comes from the director's house. So
true.
That's,
but where there's one, there has to be more.
Yeah, yeah. So that my message to the Music Box is, get on the 20th anniversary screening of Existence.
Don't sleep on this.
Don't sleep on it. We're talking about body horror, and that's a great Existence has got to be on this list, right? It's got to be.
I think it might be. Well, let's surprise ourselves.
All right, we'll find out later. But it's got to be. I mean, it's got to be like one of six or seven Cronenberg movies. I mean, he is the king of the body horror subgenre. So, and that's what we're talking about, because Society is one of those. And what do you guys think? Talk or text at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We'll get back to it and talk about some body horror. Some really cool, gross, outstanding, disgusting, fabulous body horror movies. 312-981-7200. Wildcard Wednesday. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here, downtown Chicago, here till 5 o'clock. And Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, Steve Cochran at 6 with your morning drive. It's Wednesday. That means Wildcard Wednesday. You mean Wildcard Wednesday? Any artist, any song, anything, 312-981-7200. All right, who requested that?
That's coming to us from Kathy, a little Slade.
Slade. You got to love Slade, man. All right. So welcome back. In honor of the Music Box screening of Brian Yuzna's fantastic late 80s body horror film Society, we are talking about some of the best and grossest and coolest body horror movies. And sci-fi.com put together an article of 25, talking about 25 of the body horror movies that make our bones hurt. And if you would like to read the full article, it is linked up on our Facebook page, which is one of the many reasons you should like our Facebook page, follow us, and go there now. And that's Facebook.com/Nick D Show. Facebook.com/Nick D Show. We want to hear from you guys. What are your favorites? At 312-981-7200. Here's Ike on WGN. Go ahead, Ike.
Hey, Nick. How's it going with you, man?
All right.
Okay. This is a very good recent horror movie, a body horror movie. I think that was very in the same league as The Fly. Have you heard of Contracted?
No.
Oh man, you gotta check it out. I don't want to give anything away, but it is very, very, very ingenious, especially when it comes to sexual transmitted diseases, for sure.
Okay. All right. Well, cool. All right, Ike. Thanks, man.
No problem.
Contracted for all of you body horror fans out there. There's been so many reasons why I love my listeners, but one of them is some of the texts that we get from my listeners. I love them. By the way, send your text in. We're talking body horror movies, which are the grossest and the coolest and the most awesome. 312-981-7200. 301 area code says The Fly.
Must.
Rabid. Again, those are two Cronenberg movies. Brain Dead. 773 area code says, would Reanimator qualify? Absolutely, Reanimator qualifies. Brian Yuzna, along with Stuart Gordon, we just had Brian Yuzna on, talked about Reanimator. Reanimator is certainly a body horror movie and a great one. Chris in Elk Grove says, not my favorite body horror movie, but the first one that came to mind was the Human Centipede movies. Yeah, those are body horror movies, and they also suck. Those are terrible movies. The Human Centipede movies are disgusting, and they're terrible. There's nothing... They're awful. A couple of body horror movies that I love are Slither, which is a terrific movie from James Gunn, Splinter, and Event Horizon. Event Horizon, by the way, is becoming a TV show. I don't know if people know about this or not, but this you know, crazy sci-fi gore horror movie is becoming a TV series. I mean, I didn't read, you know, a full article about it. I read a bullet point and a little description of it, but it's going to be, evidently, it's going to be, Event Horizon is going to be a TV series. Our next text here, 312-981-7200, is from Kurt. See, and again, this is one of the quintessential texts that make me love my listeners so much. This is exactly what it says. Kurt says, Body Melt. That's the name of the movie. Body Melt from 1993. It's Australian. Mucus, phlegm, puke, snot, slime, and spit. Cool. That's why my listeners are awesome. Mucus, phlegm, puke, snot, slime, and spit. Cool. And cool is in all caps with an exclamation point.
When I saw these texts, I'm like, wow, we got some real sick weirdos.
We do. We
and
do.
I love them.
No, yeah, absolutely. There's that pretty much, you know, my listener base is going to be exploited and it right at this point. But, okay, so we've got more body horror movies to talk about, and you apparently love them. So send your texts and give us your calls at 312-981-7200. And go see Society Sunday night at the Music Box. All right, we've got a break here for news and then more body horror talk after this. Right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the WGN Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It is Wednesday. That means Wildcard Wednesday. You hear me, Wildcard Wednesday? Get your requests in. Any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. Tom, who requested that?
It's coming to us from Canadian Bill. The song is Chicks, Cars, and the Third World War.
Okay. Who's that by?
Colin James.
Colin James. Okay. The only thing we know is that he's Canadian.
Has to be.
Canadian Bill only picks Canadian artists. So there you go. Welcome back, everybody. We are talking about the best, craziest, grossest, and most awesome body horror movies of all time. Very specific subgenre of the horror world. So we're talking about that. And then a little bit later on, today in history, Hawaii became the 50th state. Chat a little bit about that. And we got some weird facts about Hawaii to talk about. And we're also going to talk about some of the friendliest states ranked in the country. Also, another edition of Know Your Onion. That'll be coming up in a couple of hours right here after the 4:30 news. Tom's your host. He will read you a news headline, and you have to decide whether it's real or it's the onion. We have two separate contestants play each round and win some prizes. So that's coming up. All right, let's get back to it. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Body horror movies. The first one they mention here in the article that I have in front of me, and again, it's the sci-fi.com article that's linked up on our Facebook page, so like it now and follow us now on Facebook. It's facebook.com/NickDShow. Is Kevin Smith's Tusk, which I do not like. Kevin Smith's bizarre horror flick Tusk is billed as a black comedy as well, but there's nothing funny about being kidnapped by a bizarre retired seaman and forced to become a gruesome walrus. After a young podcast host meets one Howard Howe, who's offering a room for free, he soon finds out that Howe's intentions are less than admirable. What ensues is a terrifying tale of a man who's being forced to become a walrus on the inside and out, mutated beyond recognition and sewn inside a walrus costume made of human skin. Wallace may not have been the best guy, but he certainly didn't deserve that. Now, you're a fan of Tusk.
I think Tusk is really great. Yeah. I think it is flawed. I do not.
I think it's deeply flawed.
I think Guy Lapointe, who Johnny Depp plays, this weird French-Canadian detective, is a misstep at the very least. However, I am drawn in every time by the late, great Michael Parks, who is going full bananas.
Michael Parks was great, okay? And I love Michael Parks. But if you want to see Michael Parks give an extraordinary performance in a Kevin Smith movie, then you need to see Red State.
I would absolutely recommend Red State before Tusk.
Red State is a great movie.
Red State is really out of nowhere for Kevin Smith.
A great movie. And that doesn't fit into the category we're talking about, though. That's not a body horror movie. But Michael Parks is unbelievable in that movie. It is an extraordinary performance. And I really like Red State a lot. I was surprised at how much I liked it. Oh, by the way, some celebrity birthdays for today. You know, we've been talking about The Matrix.
Of course.
Comes out a week from Friday. It'll be released again in theaters for the 20th anniversary. The Dolby Cinema Theaters of AMC, and mm-hmm. I will be going a week from Saturday. It's Trinity's birthday today.
Carrie Ann Moss.
Carrie Ann Moss, 52.
Aw, love her.
Trinity, by the way, one of the greatest, coolest, and sexiest female characters in the history of movies.
Yeah, the Wachowskis nailed it. They were just
I can't even tell you how much I love Trinity. And I just, when it was over, I was like, okay, Trinity, that's the sexiest character I've ever seen in a movie, maybe ever. I can't.
Played by the immortally beautiful Carrie Ann Moss. I don't know what she does, but she looks same
I love her.
Now as she did 20 years ago.
Dodge this. How about this one? They include the son of David Cronenberg. Antiviral is in the article, and it says, leave it to the son of the king of body horror to come up with this dystopian tale of Sad March, an employee of the Lucas Clinic. An organization collects pathogens and viruses from celebrities and people of interest who are sick so that the public can then purchase the ability to be injected with their said germs. For some reason, fans find a way that this you can feel closer to your favorite celebrities. As sick as it sounds, things get even sicker when a celebrity meat market of SIDS injections of a seemingly terminally ill patient begins. Prepare for some serious body and medical horror as the feature wears on, proving the Cronenberg apple doesn't fall far from the tree. It was directed by Brandon, his son. Yeah, it's pretty great.
Yeah, I liked Antiviral.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty great. All right, body horror. Here's Dorothy on WGN. Hi, Dorothy.
Hi.
Hi.
I listen to you guys every single night. I enjoy you so much.
Thank you.
I'm 88 years old, and you always keep me going.
All right.
I'm talking about The Invasion of the Body Snatchers. It's been out there two or three times as remakes, and the original was with Barbara Rush with, I remember the other character, Donald Sutherland.
That's the remake. The original is Kevin McCarthy. The original is...
right, Kevin McCarthy.
Yeah, black and white, Kevin McCarthy, Don Siegel directed it. The second one is Philip Kaufman with Donald Sutherland, Brooke Adams, Jeff Goldblum, Leonard Nimoy.
Right.
That's one of the few movies where I like every version. It's been made. It's been made four times. That movie's been made four times, and this doesn't happen very often. I like every version of that movie.
So. Well, you picked a good choice, because if it wasn't that good of a movie, they wouldn't have remade it all that many times.
Well, yeah. Well, people try to remake movies all the time, and sometimes they turn out terrible. But for me, all four versions of the Body Snatcher story is pretty great.
Oh, it was. So. It was awesome.
Okay.
Fact,
thanks,
the
Dorothy.
The main one with Kevin McCarthy running down the road yelling, yeah. The Body Snatcher, yeah. The Body Snatcher.
Yep, it's classic. Classic. All right, Dorothy, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for a lovely evening.
All right, see you later. There's Dorothy, everybody. Yeah, The Invasion of the Body Snatchers. So the first one, obviously, with Kevin McCarthy is an absolute classic. During the whole Red Scare time period in American history. And it's a great one, directed by the great Don Siegel. The remake, some people consider even better than the original. I think it's just as good. Philip Kaufman directed that one. And that, of course, features Donald Sutherland. And that's fantastic. I remember the first time I saw that movie, I was 13. I saw it in the theater, and it completely freaked me out. And I was a fan already of the original Invasion of the Body Snatchers, and I didn't know what to expect from this remake. But it's amazing, actually. It's really great and really creepy, and focuses on like new age sort of religion. The effects are fantastic, and they really got away with a lot in that movie to get a PG, because that movie was rated PG. The 1978 remake of Invasion of the Body Snatchers was shockingly rated PG, but when you watch it now, you go, how did they get away with getting a PG rating for this movie? And then the third one was directed by Abel Ferrara, and it was simply called Body Snatchers, and that one took a military slant on the story. It took place on a military base. Terry Kinney, Gabriel Anwar, and a very, very scary Jennifer Tilly is in that movie, and I love that movie. I love it. And that's just, so you've got Invasion of the Body Snatchers, then you have the remake Invasion of the Body Snatchers, then you have Body Snatchers. That one was from 1993, came out in October of 1993. And again, it was an Abel Ferrara film, and really intense and really, really, really great, and took a different sort of political slant on the story. And then the fourth one was simply called Invasion, and that was with Daniel Craig and Nicole Kidman, and I'm blanking on the director of that movie. That was a movie that had some behind-the-scenes issues. The production was troubled. I think that was recut by the studio, so I think the director was upset with what became of the movie. Who was it?
So it was credited to Oliver Hirschbiegel,
mm-hmm.
but with additional scenes written by the Wachowskis,
mm-hmm.
and partially directed by James McTeague.
Right.
Who did stuff like, if I remember,
V from Vendetta. Yeah.
Which is a movie I enjoy.
It's great.
Yeah.
But I liked Invasion, and I know it was a troubled... I liked it. I thought it was really good and really creepy. And so I like all four versions of that story. Did any Body Snatcher movie, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, the second one, Body Snatchers and Invasion, I'm all for it.
Well, now, it's funny because you've got 1993's Body Snatchers, 2007's right. The Invasion.
Right.
Is the next one just going to be called Of?
Yeah, that's the next one that's just going to be Of. But have you seen the Abel Ferrara version from 93?
Some years ago, I think it was on cable, one of those. I was just like, oh, this is pretty cool. But I am really partial and, you know, obviously all big props to Don Siegel's version.
Yeah.
It's great. It's very of its time and timeless at the same moment, but I am all about Philip Kaufman's.
Well, it's great.
It's got that the shot of Donald Sutherland pointing his finger and his
yeah.
mouth just that haunts my dreams.
Yeah, man. No, it's terrifying. And it's basically the final shot of the movie.
Yeah,
and of course, it's poor Veronica Cartwright, who the next year is going to be an alien. And be in the same room with a chest burster and scream exactly how she does at the end of Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
She cannot catch a break.
She can't. She was in The Birds, too. Got attacked by birds as a little girl.
She's got one of those faces that just needs to be, yeah. I guess, attacked by some sort of evil force.
The next one that they mentioned here, we mentioned already, is the Human Centipede. I can't... I don't even acknowledge those movies. They're just repulsive for no other reason than to be repulsive.
But when they came out, they were the talk of my middle school and high school.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody was like, oh, have you seen The Human Centipede? It's crazy, man.
Mike sends in a text, 312-981-7200. You can do the same thing. Call or text 312-981-7200 for body horror. It says, From Beyond. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Another Stuart Gordon body horror movie right up there with Reanimator. Dan in Marengo says, hey, would you consider Goodnight Mommy a body horror movie? I know it takes the cake for being uncomfortable to watch at times. I do not think that's a body horror movie. Because body horror is usually some sort of transformation or some sort of gross thing that happens. And they do some terrible things in that movie. Yeah, that movie, man. And evidently the two directors have a follow-up called... The shed, not the shed, the cabin, the hut, something that, Eric saw it at Sundance and said, or not, I don't know which one he saw, what theater, what film festival he saw it at, but he said, like, it's
The Lodge.
That's it, The Lodge. And it's supposed to be as insane, if not more intense and uncomfortable than Goodnight Mommy. So I'm like, oh, good. Really good.
Got to double down.
That movie's intense, man. And that final shot, I found the final shot of Goodnight Mommy to be horrifying. And like at first it was just like, what's going on here? But the longer they held that shot, the longer it went on, the more terrifying it became. Like I remember that, and it's seared into my brain. I saw that movie the first time I saw it at the Music Box. Because I've seen Goodnight Mommy more than once, which shows how sick I am. I've seen Goodnight Mommy a bunch of times actually. The first time I saw it, there were a group of people who were sitting across the aisle from me, a few rows behind me, and they were kind of a boisterous group of people. And there was a guy in the group who, as the you've seen Goodnight Mommy, right?
Yes.
Okay. So when the kids start doing nasty things at this point, and I know there's another one where people complain about the twist. Like, oh, like we didn't see that coming. I don't think it was a twist. I think it's obvious from the beginning of the movie, and I won't give anything away. But I think what's going on is pretty obvious, and I don't think it's like a badly executed twist. I think they did that purposely because the audience is going to know. But I get tired of people, you know, also bitching about the twist in High Tension. I don't care. I do not care about the twist in High Tension. High Tension is a great movie. But anyway, as soon as the stuff started to hit the fan in Goodnight Mommy, this guy sitting with this group of people, like three rows behind me across the aisle, apparently just like had it and started going, "Oh, hell no." Like every 4 minutes when they did something, "Oh, hell no." And it was through the entire. And by the end of the movie, like the last 2 minutes of the movie, he's like, "Oh, hell no." So he was the "all hell no" guy.
He was "all hell no" till he was hoarse.
Well, and that's a movie. If you're a guy who sees a movie and goes, "Oh," and sees something insane happen, you go, "Oh, hell no." You're going to say it multiple times during Goodnight Mommy.
You might want to keep a counter.
Yeah. 608 area code texts in, "What is Nick's favorite horror movie?" It's John Carpenter's Halloween. That's my favorite horror movie. That is not a body horror movie. Doesn't fit into the category we're talking about. It's my favorite horror movie. Scariest movie I've ever seen is Suspiria, the original. So, I mean, I know some people might not know, think there's a difference. I think the best horror film ever made is John Carpenter's Halloween, but the movie that scared me the most ever was Suspiria.
Yeah, those things can be mutually exclusive.
Yes. Suspiria scared the hell out of me when I first saw 12 years old. I was almost crawling under the seats at the State Lake Theater with my father. Jeez. All right, let's take a break here, and we've got plenty more of this subgenre, this fun subgenre to talk about. Body horror movies in honor of the screening of Society at the Music Box on Sunday. Which ones do you like? Which ones gross you out? Which ones are cool? Call or text at 312-981-7200. More after this.
Coming in from London, from over the pole, flying in a big airliner, chicken flying everywhere around the plane. Could we ever feel much finer? Coming into Los Angeles, bringing in a couple of keys.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and it's Wildcard Wednesday. You mean Wildcard Wednesday? It's any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Who requested that?
That's coming to us from Mr. B, coming into Los Angeles by the good old Arlo Guthrie.
That's right. All right. So we're back. We're talking about body horror movies in honor of the screening of Society at the Music Box this weekend. Coming up at 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell, and coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Some more texts here. 217 area code says, "An American Werewolf in London." Great transformation sequence there by the great Rick Baker. Altered States. Oh, man, I love that movie. I love that movie. Paddy Chayefsky doesn't. Or didn't, I should say. Scanners. Well, there we go. Another Cronenberg. Not horror, but Bill Paxton turned into crap in Weird Science. Yes, he did. Turn into a big pile of crap. He's the only good thing in that movie. Bill Paxton is great in Weird Science.
Weird Science always made me uncomfortable.
Well, it's because it's an uncomfortable movie. It's a kind of a ragingly misogynistic movie.
Yeah.
And also not very funny, except for Bill Paxton, who's genius in it. Bill Paxton is he's great in that movie. But, of course, that's because he's Bill Paxton. And then the original RoboCop. I guess that could be a body horror movie.
There's definitely some body horror stuff going on. I agree.
Chris says, "This one just popped into my head, but would Street Trash count?" Yes, Street Trash would definitely count. I love that movie.
I almost picked up a copy of it at the Flashback weekend because, you know, they've got all the boutique Blu-ray guys there
right.
with the real, you know, hardcore stuff. And one of them, I was chatting with him. He's like, you ever seen Street Trash? I was like, yeah, man. He's like, listen, I can get this, you know, $15. I'm like, I don't know if I need to own that.
Street Trash is great. I love that movie. 317 area code says, bad taste, meet the feebles, and brain dead. Grody to the max, gooey gore, all done by Academy Award winning director Peter Jackson. You're welcome, Robin the Red. What does that mean, you're welcome? Like, I didn't know that? Is Robin the Red insinuating that I did not know that bad taste, meet the feebles, and brain dead were Peter Jackson movies? Because I did, and I've seen them several times?
Great suggestions, nonetheless.
No, they are. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. But it's like, I don't know, it was like he was like, hey, by the way, here's a little tidbit for you. Those were directed by Academy Award winning director Peter Jackson. I know that.
I'll tell you, when I found out, that was kind of, because I was, the first thing I'd ever seen him make was The Lord of the Rings.
Oh, I
and
was.
So, and those are scary. Like, those yeah. are terrifying movies.
No, I had seen all three of those movies many times, years before The Lord of the Rings. Lord of the Rings came out.
So I have to ask, what was your take when you saw The Lord of the Rings? You're like, wow, this is Peter Jackson doing a prestige sort of fantasy?
Here's the thing. He did The Frighteners before that. And The Frighteners
that's awesome.
The Frighteners is a great movie.
Very
fun. And much more accessible than Bad Taste, Meet the Feebles, and Brain Dead. So it looked like he could do a sort of commercial movie, even though The Frighteners bombed, which is unfortunate because it's a terrific movie. But, you know, I knew what kind of how much creativity the guy had. And so when I heard that he was doing the Lord of the Rings movies, I didn't care, as you know, because
right.
I thought the Lord of the Rings stuff was for dorks. Mm-hmm. I didn't read the book. I made fun of people who read the books. Then I saw Fellowship and I went, oh.
So this is what they're on about.
Oh, and then I read the books immediately. I read all three of I read all the books immediately. So yeah. No, I was a Peter Jackson fan. I was a Peter Jackson fan when he was grossing people out. I mean, Brain Dead is alone.
Mm-hmm.
Canadian Bill says, remember when Louis Del Grande's head exploded in Scanners? It was so cool. Yes, I remember that.
Good old Michael Ironside blowing his head off.
Michael Ironside blew that guy's head off. Then that duel between Michael Ironside and, God, what was that actor's name? Stephen Lack? I think it was Stephen Lack, which is an appropriate name for the guy because he had so much lack of personality.
Yeah, Stephen Lack.
Yeah. He was terrible in that movie. And as much as I love Scanners, he's a terrible lead. He was not compelling. Was not compelling in the least. But that duel they have at the end with the veins and the flames and the eyes blowing up and all that stuff. That movie rules. Okay. We're going to break here for the news. And then we come back, we have more body horror movies. And we will lead off with a lovely discussion about a film called Teeth.
No. No.
If you don't know what that is, well, you'll find out after we take a break.
Oh, jeez.
For the news. After the news, we'll talk more body horror, and we'll lead that discussion off with a discussion about the movie Teeth. That's coming up after the news.
Sleep your sleep. I'm awake and alive. I keep late hours. You're 9 to 5. So I would like you to know I need the quiet hours to create this world of mine.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How's it going? We are live in the Skyline studio here. 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. It's Wednesday. That means Wildcard Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wildcard Wednesday. Any artist, any song, anything. Who requested that, Tom?
That's coming to us from our good pal, Brian. Wanted to hear a little Bachman-Turner Overdrive.
All right.
Blue Collar.
All right. A little Bachman-Turner Overdrive. That's a deep cut. Right there. All right. Hey, welcome back, everybody. A little bit later on, we're going to talk a little bit about, because on this day in history, Hawaii became the 50th state. So we're going to talk about that. We got some weird facts about Hawaii. And then we also have all the states ranked from friendliest to least friendliest. I think we can guess what number 50 is. I would just obviously think number 50 would be New York. I mean, and if only because of the city. Not so much the surrounding. You know, New York's
Albany's pretty nice.
New York's a pretty big state. But, yeah, that would be my guess. I don't know, though. Know Your Onion is coming up after the 4:30 news. That's where Tom reads you some news headlines, and you have to decide whether they're real or they're the onion. We have two callers get in here, and they play separate rounds themselves, by themselves, and then they win prizes. That's how it works. Right now, though, we are talking about body horror movies. Really goofy, twisty, disgusting, awesome body horror movies. In honor of the screening of Society, which is taking place at the Music Box Theater this weekend, we're getting to the great sick world of body horror movies. I mentioned before the news that we were going to now talk about a movie called Teeth, which is a movie that I love a lot, actually. The plot of this movie is, I'm not going to tell you everything about it, but there's a female character named Dawn. She's a young woman who is a proponent of abstinence. The movie Teeth follows her, how her life changes drastically when she realized that she's the home for the mythical vagina dentate, or the vagina that that bites back. Lots of stuff happens in this movie. And it says there are some particularly terrifying sequences here that will absolutely shock you, especially if you happen to have male reproductive organs. Yeah.
That's putting it mildly.
I love that movie.
It was it was like one of those movies that we had to try and track down. Had to watch it in the basement of my friend's house so parents wouldn't find out.
Yeah.
What are you guys watching? You know, this chick whose genitals bite things.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's, I think Teeth is great. I love it.
There's a great revenge aspect to it that satisfying in its own way.
Yeah. Body horror movies. How about this one? Tetsu the Iron Man. This one freaked me out. This movie, like, really, like, ugh. Like, for most of the running time, I was like, I had the ugh face.
The Japanese have a very specific view of body horror that is so extreme that I think it would even make David Cronenberg flinch.
Yeah. This classic example of body horror begins with a man known as the metal fetishist shoving a metal rod into a cut on his leg. Knowing things are going to get crazy from there, he's hit by a car driven by a regular salaryman and his girlfriend, who ends up finding that metal is growing from his very insides. Okay, so then it just gets crazy after that. And like, if that didn't sound crazy enough, it gets even crazier. Next up, The Fly. This is the David Cronenberg version of The Fly, obviously. This David Cronenberg remake of the 1957 Vincent Price film is the quintessential body film, recounting the tale of one Seth Brundle, played brilliantly by Jeff Goldblum, who ends up as a hybrid fly-slash-human creature after one of his science experiments goes awry. Brundle, who was working on telepods that allow for instant teleportation from one pod to another, is accidentally merged with a fly at the molecular level. His fingernails fall off, his appearance changes drastically, and in the end, he no longer resembles anything even remotely human. If you are new to the genre, this is one film that fanatics will likely always point you to first. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's got a very important lesson.
Yeah.
Don't drink and teleport.
I took a first date to see this movie.
You're mad. You're insane.
She liked it.
I know, but the risk.
Well, the bigger risk was when I took another date, a different first date, to see Dead Ringers. That was the... So I guess I figured, you know, like 2 years ago, I took a date to see The Fly, and it turned out fine. I can take a date to see Dead Ringers. That one didn't turn out fine. I think The Fly, though, we were talking about this at the flashback convention during the Svengoolie. During the Svengoolie 40th anniversary celebration, when Ted Raimi came out. Ted Raimi, we were talking about favorite horror movies, and Ted mentioned The Fly. And that, and he said what I believe is to be true about this movie too. It's clearly a fantastic example and a gross and fun example of a body horror movie and a terrifying body horror movie. But it's also a beautiful love story. I don't care what anybody says. I think it's a beautiful love story, and it ends on a really heartbreaking and tragic note.
Gina Davis is in top form.
Well, they were together at that time too. So the exactly. so Gina Davis and Jeff Goldblum were a couple at that time in real life.
There's some real heat there.
Absolutely. And it also has the greatest arm wrestling scene in history. You can take over the top and you can take it and shove it, because the scene in The Fly, when he busts that guy's arm just in half, the bone goes through the skin. It's like, that's the greatest arm wrestling scene I've ever seen in my life.
I'm feeling a little woozy just thinking about it.
It's a great moment. And a very Cronenberg-like moment, too. We've got Reanimator, which we all know this one.
Why don't you get a job at a sideshow?
It's just such an insane movie.
And when they chase the cat,
it's ridiculous.
You never actually see the cat. Like I think they had trouble with the special effects, so they're just like, just pretend that there's a cat there,
right?
And they chase nothing but the sound of a cat.
It's hilarious. It's awesome. Yeah, there's so much stuff in Reanimator that is just like on another level of insanity. We were talking about it earlier. If you missed the interview with Brian Usna, who produced Reanimator, who directed Society, which is the movie that inspired our conversation about body horror, about the first time seeing Reanimator, I was in a screening room in 1985 with about 40 critics, and many of us knew the work of Stuart Gordon, his theater work with Organic, and just was like, what is this? And it still holds up. Reanimator is a completely insane movie. Here's one of my favorite movies ever, Videodrome, another David Cronenberg movie. Man, I'll tell you what, my buddy and I went to go see that movie that came out senior year of high school for me. It came out early 1983. So it was like February or March of 1983. So it was early in the year, because Cronenberg released in the same year, Cronenberg released one of his least accessible movies and one of his most accessible movies in the same year, because he released Videodrome in February and The Dead Zone in October. And you wouldn't think that they were the same director. were the same director. But Videodrome is just, I think, and I also think, you know, obviously now James Woods is a lunatic. He's lost his mind completely and he's nuts. But there was a time when James Woods was one of the coolest and one of the best actors on the planet. And no performances are as almost as good as what he does in Videodrome. And Deborah Harry. But James Woods is so good in Videodrome, and doing some of the most ridiculous stuff that you would ever have to do. But man, I'll tell you what, my buddy who went with me to see this movie, he hated it.
Really?
Oh my God, did he hate it? And I, of course, loved every frame of it. And it ends on a smash cut to black in a very abrupt way. Movie's like 86 minutes long. And my friend was like, "What the hell was that?" And I'm like, "What are you talking about, man? It's one of the best movies I've seen all year." He's like, "You're an idiot. You're an idiot." He was not one of my more adventurous horror friends, you know? And he was just like, he was mad. Long live the new flesh. Shut up.
I mean, that movie pushes some boundaries.
Oh, man.
It pushes...
way ahead of its time, too, yeah. By the way. Way ahead of its time. Well, now you watch it, it's dated because it's VHS tapes being shoved into his gut and
yeah,
and all that stuff. But I mean, what that movie is about... you could watch that movie. You could watch Videodrome right now and substitute Videodrome for social media, and you have the same thing. Like, thematically, that movie works now. There's no question about it.
Very prescient.
And here's what they say about another Cronenberg classic. Videodrome follows a man named Max Wren, who works at a TV station broadcasting what amounts to software porn and violence. He happens upon a shockingly violent broadcast one day that culminates in the murder of anonymous victims, and decides it's the future for his station. It's called Videodrome, and it turns out to be much more than a collection of violent programming. Wren bites off more than he can chew when he begins experiencing hallucinations, in which his torso is transformed into a slot where you can play video cassettes. Yes, that's what happens. And even a weapon that is forged from his own body. I just thought that movie was, I thought it was great. Man, my friend was mad. He was so mad. So then Cronenberg, you know, in the fall releases The Dead Zone, which is, both those movies made my top 10 list that year. Both Cronenberg movies made my top 10 list that year. Dead Zone is one of my favorite Stephen King adaptations of all of them, maybe my favorite. And it definitely features my favorite Christopher Walken performance of all time. And it's also the saddest movie of all time. It's the saddest movie ever made. That character goes through. It is absolutely the saddest movie ever made. God, Martin Sheen is so good in it. You put your hand on that scanning screen, or I'll hack it off and put it on there for you. And Brooke Adams from Invasion, the Body Snatchers, fantastic in it. Herbert Lahm, please. Tom Skerritt.
I love a little Tom Skerritt.
Man, Tom Skerritt, please. I just find that movie to be devastating. I watch it. I've seen it a million times, and it never ceases to just make me unbelievably sad. And I mean that in a good way, because I'm so sucked into the story, and I care so much about Johnny that what happens to him is, I find it devastating every time I watch it.
Well, that's the best quality of any of Stephen King's great works, is that it always points towards some sort of underlying sadness beneath all the horror it's emanating from. In The Shining, it's alcoholism, and you know, and in it, it's childhood trauma, and you know, the sins of a town,
right?
You know, so The Dead Zone just falls in line with that, and that's why it's one of the great adaptations, one of the great books.
But it's a Cronenberg movie that's not like a lot of Cronenberg movies, meaning that there's no body horror in it. But you know, but the same in the same year, he released like one of the ultimate body horror movies in Videodrome.
He got his yah-yahs out early.
Yeah. Long live the new flesh. I really thought my friend Bob went with me to see it. My buddy Bob from high school, and I really thought he was going to beat the crap out of me. We saw it at the Norwich, and I don't know how the hell that movie ended up playing in, you know, multiplexes, but Videodrome played the Norwich.
What can be said?
It was a different time, man.
More adventurous things were in your multiplex.
Speaking of Cronenberg, I mean, Naked Lunch has got to be here, right? It's got to be. I mean,
I don't think even one of my favorites makes that list.
What?
The Brood. I don't know if The Brood's on there.
It's not. I don't know if it is either. Well, that's another great movie. The Brood is a fantastic movie.
And I didn't see that until college.
Oliver Reed, man.
Yeah.
You don't mess around with Oliver Reed. But no, that's a great movie. The Brood is a great movie. God, he's made a lot of good movies. Cronenberg has made a lot of good movies.
Well, it's just, he starts out with what? Shivers?
Shivers.
Shivers, Rabid.
Well, yeah, well, he did a car racing movie.
Well, that was in the era of Canadian government money getting pumped into anything. Anybody that was trying to make a movie.
Shivers
in
is also, for some people might know it as They Came From Within.
Because
it was also, when I saw it as They Came From Within when it was released in theaters. And Rabid, I think he followed up Rabid with the car race movie. I think Rabid was the car, he did the car race. Fast Company? But Naked Lunch is one of my favorite movies. Here's the thing about Naked Lunch. He took a book that's... Have you read Naked Lunch?
Yes. Yeah.
He took a book that is, without question, impossible to adapt into a movie. Impossible. Like, you read Naked Lunch, you're like, there's no way. When I heard that Cronenberg... Well, first of all, when I heard that Cronenberg was making it, I went, well, if there's one director who might be able to make sense of this, it's David Cronenberg. But what he did was he made it about the writing of Naked Lunch. That's what he did. That was the genius move that he made. He didn't. He took all of the elements and all of the stuff and the ideas that's in Burroughs' book, and he made it about him writing Naked Lunch. And that was the most genius approach that you could possibly do with that material. Unfilmable narrative, unfilmable book, and he turned it into a brilliant movie about the creation of a piece of art, of a classic piece of art, and about writing in general. And it came out right after Barton Fink. And Barton Fink was also about the creation of art and writing. And they were within months, two of the best movies ever made about the process of writing, and about the process of creating, and how weird that can be, and how it gets under your skin. So the Coen brothers come out with Barton Fink. 4 months later, Naked Lunch comes out, and they're completely movies that you could watch back to back. They're both weird. They both deal in stuff that's unexplainable, and they're both brilliant movies about the creation and the process of writing. And they were two of the best movies. I mean, so.
And I think the only movie that I think compares to it that I've really seen is Adaptation.
Yeah,
which is not about the Orchid Thief or even like an adaptation of the Orchid Thief, but about adapting the Orchid Thief.
No, exactly.
And it's really interesting.
That's absolutely my favorite. Why am I blanking on the screenwriter's name?
Charlie Kaufman.
It's absolutely my favorite screenplay by him, without question. I love that movie. I love that movie.
And Nick Cage turning in a transformative performance.
An incredible performance. Maybe his best performance of all time. Maybe. No, Vampire's Kiss is the best performance of all time. All right, we got a break here. We'll come back when we got more body horror movies to talk about. 312-981-7200 if you want to get gross. Talk or text. 312-981-7200. I'm an animal. Gonna go alone now. Cause that's the way it's got to be. Everybody tells me how I can meet the odds for now. I've been standing by the fire, just can't feel the heat, can't feel the heat. Why in God's name would anybody request Don Johnson's Heartbeat? Why?
Take a shot in the dark. Who requests that?
Ike?
Yeah.
I mean, is it just anything from the 80s he'll request? Even like the biggest pieces of crap? Because that is one of the worst songs ever recorded. And also, by the way, voted on MTV is the worst video that they've ever shown, and they banned it from MTV.
Really?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. No, it's absolute crap.
And
the video is just ridiculous. And they did like a long form video too that was like 15 minutes long.
Yeah.
Ray Don Chong was in it.
Yeah, he's in like Vietnam or something.
He's a photojournalist or something. Like he's a cameraman. I don't even. It's horrendous. Don Johnson.
Have you seen these Jeep commercials with Jeremy Renner?
Yeah, what's going on there?
I guess he wants to be like Don Johnson, wants to have a music career, man.
You know, here's the thing. I love Jeremy Renner. Okay? I love him. I love him going back to the 28 Weeks Later movie.
Yeah.
And obviously Hurt Locker, that was where I went, okay, this guy's the king.
Very talented.
And I've loved him in a lot of stuff, but he has been making some decisions.
Well, he's got all that Avengers money now.
He does.
We'll be talking about his upcoming album this Friday. Jeannie and I were watching that commercial last night, asking the same thing. What is happening with Renner?
That is so fun. That was the timing on that was perfect. We'll be talking about that on Vic's Picks on Friday morning.
Oh, wow. I'm not going to lie. That was my heart skipped a beat.
It was like, a long, wait, I was there like, was what? Pause there, you guys.
What?
I was like, is he really going to just talk Jeremy Renner?
Jeremy Renner. Ugh. And I'm one of the guys who defends Hawkeye. I defend Hawkeye.
Sure, he's getting his own TV show, getting his own Disney Plus show.
Because I like him. But, you know, the Bourne movie, he's done some movies that are just not good.
Tag.
Oh, I didn't hate Tag.
I thought it was fine.
There were things in Tag that I liked. There were things in Tag that I laughed at. The stupid movie, but I laughed at it. But this whole, like, I'm Jeremy Renner and come see me at the fair, I don't know what the hell's going on.
I'm
going
to sing this real soulful, but poppy blues song.
I will tell you this. Even if Jeremy Renner releases an album and it's the worst album of this year, it's not nearly as bad as what Don Johnson did with Heartbeat. Not even in the same vicinity. Not even in the same crap ballpark.
Top 10 musical crimes of the 80s.
That might be number one. And there are a lot of musical crimes in the 80s. A lot. But that Don Johnson thing, good Lord.
Right. At least we'll always have Miami Vice.
No, that's fine. You can have Miami Vice. I prefer Colin Farrell. Thank you very much. And I definitely prefer Jamie Foxx to Philip Baker. What's his name? Philip Thomas Johnson. What was his name? The idiot, the guy, his partner?
He had three names.
He had three names. The actor who played him. David Thomas Lips. Lippy Johnson. What's his name? But I can't remember his name. He also released an album, too. That idiot released an album, too. Both Crockett and Tubbs released records, and they both sucked. Philip Michael Thomas?
Philip Michael
Thomas. Okay, there you go. All right. I knew
Lippy
I'd get it.
Johnson. That was
close.
Yeah,
I don't know. I was close. All right, we're getting late here for the news. We can keep talking about Miami Vice all morning. All right, the news is up next. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, and we're here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. The great Steve Cochran at 6 has your morning drive. It's Wednesday, Wild Card Wednesday. You hear me, Wild Card Wednesday? Get your requests in now, 312-981-7200. Any artist, any song, any thing. Who requested that?
That's coming to us from Mike in Frankfurt. It's called Blues for Finley. It's by the band Gong.
Gong. You know, I saw Gong at the House of Blues about 18 years ago. Went with my buddy Jim, who was a big prog rock guy, like a major prog rock guy. And a pretty crazy band, Gong.
Hmm.
But the best story about Gong, who is they're very popular among the prog rock community and the prog rock fans.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember who their leader, the name of the leader, lead singer, and the guy who basically formed Gong is. They've been around for a long time, and they're prog as hell. Like, their songs are 18, 19 minutes long, very strange, way out there. Actually, they were pretty great in concert. It was weird, but it was great.
Was his name Fabio Golfetti?
You know, I don't know. I'm not really sure. But he was a guy. If I remember correctly,
or Gilly Smith.
No, he had like a beard and like it was like tall. He had a long beard and he was tall and skinny and wore really weird clothes. And by the time I saw them. You know, they were popular like in the 60s and 70s. That was like their heyday. I saw them I saw them in the early 2000s. I saw them like 2001, 2002 at House of Blues. So they were up in there, you know, like they probably weren't the original members. It was probably the guy, the founder was still there and he was like 70 by the time I saw, but my favorite story about Gong, and you could look this up, and I would suggest that people have some fun and look this story up, because there is an incredible story that in the biggest Gong fan, if you can believe this, was Sherman Hemsley, who played George Jefferson on the Jeffersons. He was like the biggest Gong fan. At the height of the popularity of the Jeffersons, he would have these insane parties. Booze, drugs, women,
Gong.
He was the biggest Gong fan of all time. George Jefferson was the biggest Gong fan of all time. He'd blow weed, take drugs, and listen to Gong. He had Gong over at his house. He was obsessed with him. And every time anybody came over to his house, all he would play would be Gong. So if you were going to go over to Sherman Hemsley's house during the height of the popularity of the Jeffersons, when he was George Jefferson in the 70s, you would only hear Gong. And there's a great story. I can't get into the details, but there's this great story that I read years ago detailing just some of the weirdness that Sherman Hemsley would do and like his obsession with Gong. Like, you would never expect George Jefferson's favorite band and the band that he would be obsessed with is this insane prog rock band called Gong.
So I'm trying to put myself in this time. It's the 70s.
Yeah.
You're going over to Mr. Jefferson's house.
George Jefferson's house.
You're probably completely faced, and you show up, and you've just got like,
you've got insane. You've got Gong, which is some of the most insane music you'll ever hear. And I'm assuming that if you're going over to Sherman Hemsley's house at the height of his popularity, George Jefferson, knowing that one of the popular things that George Jefferson has is the way he dances. Because that was a thing on the show. Like, Sherman Hemsley had a very distinctive walk and a very distinctive dance. And it was always some sort of funky music that they would play on the Jeffersons if George would dance. Funky is about as far as you can get from Gong. And that's the stuff that he loved most. And I wish I could remember what publication said, but like a music publication did an extended story about Sherman Hemsley's absolute, you know, obsession with the prog rock Gong. And it was one of the funniest and craziest and weirdest music slash entertainment stories I had ever read. Yeah. So anyway, if you just Google Sherman Hemsley and Gong, something will pop up.
Oh yeah. It's definitely popped up.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. It's a real thing. Like, the very last band that you would expect George Jefferson to like would be this weird, you know, prog rock band called Gong. The story is hilarious, too. Like, I mean, there's an extended story that goes into all of the report that they did that goes into all of the stories that involve Sherman Hemsley and his obsession with Gong.
Absolute madness.
Yeah. It's pretty funny. All right. we're wrapping this up here. We got some weather coming up in just a few minutes, and then we're going to wrap it up with the body horror movies. And we're going to jump into what happened on this date. That was when Hawaii became a state on this date. We'll talk a little bit about Hawaii and then talk a little bit about friendliest states. But we're still talking body horror. And if you want to jump in, next here mentioned is Eraserhead. David Lynch's surrealist body horror film is as disturbing as it is indecipherable, but I don't think it's indecipherable.
No, I think that's a big misconception. It's pretty obvious about what it's about.
Yeah. It features copious amounts of gruesome imagery surrounding the quote-unquote child in the film. I personally think that the kid's adorable.
What, the little like larva thing?
Yeah, I think he's adorable.
Ugh.
I think he's adorable.
Oh, you are sick.
It's the offspring of protagonist Henry Spencer and girlfriend Mary X, two bizarre individuals who have somehow spawned a limbless monstrosity that's swaddled in thick bandage-like material. It looks vaguely like a baby alien calf or some sort of reptile, but it's nothing of this world. The scene in the movie with the chickens at dinner, Cornish hen, whatever it is. That's the scene where I go, what? Then you got the girl behind the radiator. I love that movie. I love Eraserhead.
It's so much fun to watch.
It is fantastic.
But you can tell it was made during a pretty dark period in his life because he was living in, I want to say Pittsburgh? He was living in a city center. and all the imagery is just of like factories and alleyways, and it's really very oppressive.
It's that was the first David Lynch movie I ever saw, was Eraserhead. It was the first one I ever saw. And I immediately loved it. I was like 13 when I saw it the first time. It's weird how certain movies, if you saw them at a very young age, had Eraserhead had a profound effect on me, as it would any 13-year-old. You know, you're not used to this kind of movie either. You know what I mean? And I was like, this is fantastic. I don't know what the hell's happening. That, and I saw Clockwork Orange at way too young. I was 11 maybe when I saw Clockwork Orange. And that's another one that, like, you know, as you get older, you know, okay, it's Clockwork Orange. But, you know, like, when you're like 11 or maybe barely 12 when I saw Clockwork Orange, it's going to have a pretty profound effect on you.
Yeah, that's a bitter pill to swallow.
I was just like, no, I loved it. I thought it was
great,
awesome. But
some of the imagery is just insane and horrifying.
It's the imagery, it's the violence, it's the sex. It's the language, and I'm not talking about profanity. I'm talking about Burgess's words that
yeah, it was called like NADSAT or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah.
A mixture of Anglicanized Russian.
It was just, and I didn't know, you know, like that was one of those movies, one of those mind-boggling movies that a fresh 12-year-old should probably not see without some sort of explanation. And I saw, I followed it up with Eraserhead. So I you know, this is the kid who saw The Exorcist at 8 is now watching, you know, barely 12 and watching Clockwork Orange, following it up with Eraserhead. So this may be, you know, you guys might be getting an insight as to, you know, how you might want to raise your kids considering how I turned out.
I feel like you were probably in a room with a bunch of doctors like observing you at one point.
Oh, at some point. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, they had me, and they actually had my eyelids stretched open, and they were dropping eye drops in my eyes. Free me glasses! Free me glasses! And I still don't believe the ending of that movie. I was cured all right. What?
Completely excising the last chapter of the book because Stanley Kubrick was like, actually, you know what? Forget that.
Yeah, exactly. I love that movie, though, man. Jeez. Yeah. God, movies. See, you know, it's a topic that we should do sometime.
What, movies that'll scramble your brain?
Yeah, well, no, movies that you see at a young age that really had a profound effect on you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like for instance, and Pinocchio had a profound effect on me.
Oh, God. That's one of the scariest movies I've ever seen.
The whale. I mean, I don't even know what to say. And Bambi, same thing, Bambi. Those are kids' movies, but I'm mm-hmm. talking like movies that might not be appropriate for kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't imagine what like a 9-year-old, you know, would think of the first 10 minutes of Up. I don't even know what as a child, how do you process that?
Hey kids, you ready to learn about grief?
Right, we can't have children and then she dies. That's the first 10 minutes of Up.
It's official.
The love of this man's life who is barren and they can't reproduce. You see, then she's dead, and he's all alone. Then some idiot Boy Scout shows up and bugs him. I love that movie, though. So
he learns the value of friendship.
He does, but it takes a little. But I don't need that first 10 minutes. I didn't need that in my life. I didn't need to be sobbing 10 minutes into a Pixar movie. My God! All right, let's break. We got the weather. We'll come back. We'll wrap up the body horror movie stuff. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200 for talk and text.
When you find yourself in danger, when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking, there is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken. But if you're afraid, you'll have to overlook it. Besides, you knew the job was dangerous when you took it.
Who requested Super Chicken?
That's Paul Maryland.
Paul Maryland. All right, there you go. Wildcard Wednesday. You've been Wildcard Wednesday. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Coming up is Steve Grzanich with the opening bell. Also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right, really quickly, I want to get back to this Sherman Hemsley gong thing. David Allen was the name of the leader of Gong, and he was also the leader of Soft Machine. And he spelled it D-A-E-V-I-D. And this is like his, just really quickly, because this is such a ridiculous story. This is like his sort of verbatim account of meeting Sherman Hemsley. He said, it was 1978 or 79, and Sherman Hemsley kept ringing me up. I didn't know him from a bar of soap because we didn't have a television in Spain where I was living. He called me from Hollywood saying, I'm one of your biggest fans, and I'm going to fly you here. And put flying teapots up all down Sunset Strip. Flying Teapots is one of their signature songs. And I thought, this guy's a lunatic. He kept it up. And I said, listen, can you get us tickets to L.A. via Jamaica? I want to go there to make a reggae track and have a honeymoon with my new girlfriend. He said, sure, I'll get you two tickets. Anyway, even though he was a nutcase, he would do it. Okay, so we take the plane across to L.A. We heard Sherman was a big star, but we didn't know the details. Coming down the corridor from the plane, I saw this black guy with a whole bunch of people running around after him trying to get autographs. Anyway, we get to the stretch limousine with Sherman, and immediately there's a big joint being passed around. Then I start blowing weed with George Jefferson, okay? And you have to picture this tall, crazy gong, you know, lead frontman. He said, sorry, I don't smoke. Sherman says, you don't smoke and you're from Gong? Inside the front door of Sherman's house was a sign saying, don't answer the door because it might be the man. There were two Puerto Ricans that had an LSD laboratory in his basement, so they were really paranoid. They also had a little freebase depot on every floor. Then Sherman says, come on upstairs and I'll show you the flying teapot room. Sherman was very sweet, but he was surrounded by really, really crazy people. We went up to the top floor, and there was a big room with darkened windows, and Flying Teapot is playing on a tape on a loop over and over and over and over again. There were also three really dumb-looking, very voluptuous Southern gals stoned and wobbling around naked. They were obviously there for the guys to play around with. My girlfriend Maggie and I were really tired, and we went to our room to go to bed. The room had one mattress with an electric blanket, and that was it. No bed covering, no pillow, no nothing. The next day we came down, Sherman showed us a couple of episodes of the Jeffersons. One of our fans came and rescued us, but not before Sherman took us to see the Hollywood PR people. They said, well, Mr. Hemsley wants us to get information because we need to order these flying teapot billboards for all of Sunset Strip. I looked at them and thought that they were the cheesiest, most nasty people that I had ever seen in my life, and I gave them the runaround. I just wanted out of there. I liked Sherman a lot. He was a very personal and charming guy, but I had a lot of trouble with the people around him. So that's the story of George Jefferson hanging around with David Allen, the leader of Gong. I love that the next morning he showed them episodes of the Jeffersons. I love that story. I love that story. All right. One last body horror movie that we'll get to. Okay, I'll just rattle off a few more titles. The Skin I Live In, which is Almodovar, which is a really great movie. Hellraiser, the original Hellraiser. Cabin Fever, Existence, American Mary, a great movie. We mentioned Slither a little bit earlier, which is also a classic. So those are some, and of course, The Incredible Melting Man. You can't talk about body horror movies without The Incredible Melting Man. Okay. And Sherman Hemsley and Gong.
I hear those two pair really well.
Man, oh man. Okay, we are going to break here for the news, and when we come back, on this date in 1959... Hawaii becomes our 50th state. So we're going to talk about Hawaii and then talk about some of the friendliest states and that are ranked. And, of course, we have another round of Know Your Onion. So get ready to Know Your Onion. That's all coming up right after the news, which is next. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DeGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the WGN Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. Wildcard Wednesday.
You mean Wildcard Wednesday?
That's any artist, any song, anything. Who requested that, Tom?
That's coming to us from Mike in Old Irving Park.
Mike in Old Irving Park.
Want to hear the hip-hop.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Mike in Old Irving Park. That's my neck of the woods. So, welcome back. Hi, everybody. And, yeah, hey, listen, coming up after the 4:30 news, it's our weekly game show hosted by Tom, and it is called Know Your Onion. This is when we have two contestants call in, first two people through. They are our two contestants. They will each play a round on their own. And the idea is to know your onion, meaning Tom will read you a news headline, and you have to decide whether it's real or whether it's fake, and it's satirical and funny from The Onion. So you either say, that's real, or that's The Onion. And we love playing this game. It's a little sometimes it's a little weird because the news is so insane right now, the real news is so insane, that sometimes it's difficult to tell between what's real and what's The Onion. So we'll do that after the 4:30 news with your chance to win. Okay. So on this date in 1959, Hawaii becomes the 50th state. Did you know that, Tom?
I did not know that. Well, I knew it was the 50th state.
The modern United States received its crowning star when President Dwight D. Eisenhower signs a proclamation admitting Hawaii to the Union as the 50th state. The president also issued an order for an American flag featuring 50 stars arranged in staggering rows, 5 6-star rows, 4 5-star rows. The new flag would become official on July 4th, 1960. The first known settlers of the Hawaiian Islands were Polynesian voyagers who arrived sometime in the 8th century. In the early 18th century, American traders came to Hawaii to exploit the island's sandalwood, which was much valued in China at the time. In the 1830s, the sugar industry was introduced to Hawaii. And by the mid-19th century, had become well-established. American missionaries and planters brought about great changes in the Hawaiian political, cultural, and economic and religious life. In 1840, a constitutional monarchy was established, stripping the Hawaiian monarch of much of its authority. In 1893, a group of Americans, expatriates and sugar planters, supported by a division, they got rid of they deposed Queen Liliuokalani, the last reigning monarch of Hawaii, and 1 year later, the Republic of Hawaii was established as a U.S. Hawaiian board by Hawaiian board Hawaiian born Sanford B. Dole as president. So, and many in Congress opposed the formal annexation of Hawaii, but it wasn't until 1898, following the use of the naval base at Pearl Harbor during the Spanish-American War, that Hawaii's strategic importance became evident and formal, and the formal annexation was approved. 2 years later, Hawaii was recognized in a formal U.S. territory, and during World War II, Hawaii became firmly ensconced in the American national identity following the surprise attack on Pearl Harbor in 1941. And then on this date in 1959, it became the 50th state. Tom, you ever been to Hawaii?
No, I've dreamt of going for so long. I want to go so bad.
I've never been to Hawaii. We have some very faithful listeners from Hawaii who pretty much regularly every year send us chocolate-covered macadamia nuts.
Ooh.
And they're really good.
That does sound
nice. They come to the lower 48, you mm-hmm. know, whenever they have some free time.
Is it still considered the lower 48?
It's just considered, well, they call it the 48,
yeah,
as opposed to, well, the United States isn't lower, the actual body of the 48 isn't lower than Hawaii.
Right. But the 48.
It is lower than Alaska.
Yeah.
So that's what they refer to it in Alaska. They refer to it as the lower
48.
I don't know. Do they refer to it as the upper 48 in Hawaii?
I feel like the mainland, I've heard.
Yeah, the mainland. That's probably what it is. But I've never been to Hawaii either. But the only time I've ever been to Hawaii is vicariously either through movies or TV shows. Like, for instance, the infamous Brady Bunch episode that took place in Hawaii, which, if I'm not mistaken, featured Vincent Price. Because I think the Hawaii episode of the Brady Bunch, maybe someone can correct me, is when Bobby gets the cursed necklace. It's like a necklace that's cursed, and a spider crawls on Peter, or a thing falls off the wall and almost kills. Greg almost dies in a surfing accident when he's wearing the pendant. It's like a cursed,
idol. It's the Tiki Idol.
The Tiki Idol.
Because there is a song by the band Presidents of the United States of America.
Oh, okay.
That's literally about this episode.
Okay.
Also called Tiki God.
Well, that's one of the most legendary episodes of the Brady Bunch, and it takes place in Hawaii. And Vincent Price, I think Vincent Price is in it. I think Vincent Price is the one who tells them about the curse, or I can't remember. There's also one where they go to the Grand Canyon, where the Brady Bunch goes to the Grand Canyon, and they end up in an old Western jail. And I can't remember who the guest star was there. I want to say it was Jim Backus, who played Thurston Howell on Gilligan's Island and was the voice of Mr. Magoo. Jim Backus. You know, it always reminds me, when I was a kid, when I was in high school, my buddies and I somehow got a hold of some of the teachers' phone numbers, like home phone numbers, and we would make prank calls.
Oh, man.
And so we called up one teacher, and he asked him, his first name was Jim, so we were like, is Jim home? And we're trying to sound mature. And meanwhile, you know, we're all like 15, 16, 17 years old. I don't know how old we were. We were dorks. We were idiots. And so we were on different extensions and in different parts of my friend's house. So everybody's like cupping their hand over the bottom part of the phone so that you don't hear, but we're listening in, you know, and everybody's, you know, they had like three extensions in their house and all three of them were being used. And one guy was delegated to actually talk, you know, to whoever answered the phone. And so his first name wasn't Jim. His first name was something else. Don't say his name was Dave. So we call up, Dave there. Let me check. I think he's pulling into the driveway right now. Hold on. So they put the phone down. This, of course, was like in 1982 or 83 or something, when, you know, people didn't even have cordless phones at this point, you know. So the person who answered the phone, presumably it was this teacher's wife, comes back. And you can hear like in the background, like she's walking around, and we're like going, hee, hee. You know, we're laughing. We got our hands over the phone so that they don't hear us. And we're all just kind of gathering around like, oh, isn't this funny? We're calling a teacher. Aren't we cool? Isn't this freaking you out? And so she comes back and she goes, no, that wasn't him. It was one of our neighbors. I'll just tell him that you called. And the guy on the phone, my friend Bob who hated Videodrome.
Oh, my God.
It was my friend Bob who hated Videodrome. He goes, yes, please tell him I called. And she goes, okay, what's your name? And he goes, Jim. And she goes, Jim what? And he goes, Jim Backus. And we immediately, we all start laughing. We have to hang up because we just said that Mr. Magoo called this person's house. Yeah, just tell him Jim Backus called, you know, from Gilligan's Island. Jim Backus.
I'm a big fan of your work.
I loved you in that episode of the Brady Bunch where they get thrown into the old West jail when they're going to Grand Canyon. I think that's what happens in that episode. Jim Back. Yeah, it's Jim Back. Tell him Jim Back is called. He knows me from the old days.
The all or nothing days.
And then the other TV show that I remember having a classic Hawaiian episode, and I don't mean Hawaii 5-0, and I don't mean Magnum PI, the obvious ones that all take place there. But it was a Sanford and Son episode, and it was called The Hawaiian Connection. And I don't remember the exact plot, but there were some gangsters who wanted to smuggle jewelry or something out, and they were going to use Fred, you know, as a decoy or something. And it was all on location, because Sanford and Son was never on location. It was just, the set was always the junkyard and the living room. That was always, you know, they never went on location. But this was all shot. I remember it was a big deal. It was like a three-parter. It was called The Hawaiian Connection. I think it was a full 90 minutes. It was a three-parter.
Jeez.
a three-parter. And this was late in the series. This was when the series had jumped the shark. This was because the last two and a half or so seasons of Sanford and Son were not very good. They definitely weren't good as the first three seasons, which are classic. But and it starred, oh, man, the guest stars. I can't remember, oh, man, who the guest stars were. But yeah, so they were going to be used as a decoy. Lamont and Fred were going to be used as a decoy to smuggle out, like, diamonds or something from the island because the authorities were after these three gangsters. It was two guys and a woman. It was two men and a woman. And the woman was like a 70s, she was a 70s it girl, like a 70s TV it girl. She showed up on game shows and stuff a lot. And I can't remember her name. I want to say Leonard something was the leader of the gang, and he was like a sitcom producer. Something Leonard something. But anyway, that was the only other thing that I know about Hawaii. So the two things that I know about Hawaii, there are three things I know about Hawaii. The Brady Bunch went there and they had a cursed tiki, and they were all of them were almost murdered by Vincent Price. Lamont and Fred went there and were supposed to smuggle some diamonds for some gangsters. And the only other thing I know about about Hawaii, spam.
Good old spam.
Good old spam. So.
No, I want to go hike up a volcano or yeah. something.
Yeah. While eating spam.
Yeah. Do the ceremonial spam eating.
Wear the tiki necklace.
Oh, absolutely.
Have Fred Sanford be your guide. Let's go down this volcano, dummy. All right. Hear about some weird things about Hawaii. We're going to tell you about that coming up right here on this, the anniversary of it becoming its our 50th state. Yeah, man. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. One of our listeners blowing weed. What's going on here?
Just you know, a little iron butterfly in a Gata da Vida.
Who requested it?
It's coming to us from Reese in Carroll Stream.
Right, Reese, you know how that song got named, right?
Isn't it supposed to be in the Garden of Eden?
Yeah. Yeah, but the songwriter was so loaded he couldn't say the words. In a Gata da Vida. Because he was trying to tell them, he was trying to tell them, but they were all completely annihilated. And he was going, da, da, da. He was telling about a song title, and he had an idea to write a song about it. Inagata da Vida. And they were like, you know, the next day they're like, let's just call it Inagata da Vida.
Yeah, that always makes me think of Manhunter.
Yeah, I can understand that. Here's the thing I think of immediately when I hear Inagata da Vida, and Manhunter's. I mean, obviously it's attached to that movie forever. But I think of the organist in church at The Simpsons. That's the where he switches the music to Inagata da Vida, and it's like 15 minutes later doing the insane solo. That's the first thing I think of is The Simpsons. So, by the way, it was Sheldon Leonard we discovered, who was a massively popular sitcom producer. Who produced many sitcoms, including The Dick Van Dyke Show, and he appeared on we're talking about the Hawaiian Connection, the fantastic, epic three-part episode of Sanford and Son. Don Ho appeared as himself in that episode.
I think Don Ho was in the Brady Bunch.
He's probably in the Brady Bunch. Well, that's another thing that is, but hey, by the way, Dave's on TV again. Dave Bennett.
How'd he get in there?
I don't know how he got on TV, but he's on TV right now, and I'm freaking out because I know he's going to be here in just a few minutes, and he's probably going to have different clothes on, and I don't know how he does it. He's magic. Dave Ennett is a magic man. You know that Hart wrote that song about Dave Ennett. I don't know if you know that or not.
Yeah.
But he's on Channel 9 right now, so that means he's at Bradley Place right now, and somehow he's going to get to 303 East Wacker the next 3 minutes with different clothes on.
That's where Dean lives.
It's insane.
Bradley Place.
Yeah. Don't they all live there? Doesn't everybody? They all live there. They all have like a hut that they sleep in.
A hovel.
Tomasulo sleeps in a different place. They put him They separate Tomasulo from everybody else.
Yeah.
You know, Marcus's room is just all little pictures of roller coasters. I don't know if you know that or not, but where he sleeps, where Marcus sleeps, it's just he sleeps in a roller coaster.
He's got a collection of Matchbox cars where he just goes vroom.
Yeah. And Robin is very tired of cleaning up after these guys.
Animals.
Yeah. All right. Hawaii is what we're talking about. Most specifically, Sanford and Son and the Three Stooges. The Three Stooges were never in Hawaii. They should have been. Here are some things that you might not know about Hawaii. There are only 13 letters in the Hawaiian alphabet, and every word and syllable ends in one of the five vowels. Oh, I did not know that. That's interesting. So there are only 13 letters in the Hawaiian alphabet, and every word and syllable ends with one of the five vowels. How about this one? The apostrophe-like mark that you see in some Hawaiian words is called an okina. It's a consonant that signifies a slight pause. If two words seem to be spelled exactly alike, but one has an okina, you're looking at two different words. For example, moa means chicken, while mo'a means cooked. If you have that little apostrophe-looking thing, it's a consonant. Wow. The state of Hawaii consists of eight main islands, the biggest of which is called, you guessed it, the Big Island. The Big Island's official name is Hawaii. How about your next thing you might not know about Hawaii? The Big Island's getting bigger by more than 42 acres each year thanks to the Kalayu volcano. It's been erupting for 30 years. Mauna Loa, one of the world's largest volcanoes, is located on the Big Island. Astronauts once trained for moon voyages by walking on its hardened lava fields. Good Lord! Most recently, six NASA-funded researchers spent months on the northern slope simulating the Mars space station. Hey, Tom, the next time we have Rod Pyle on, I want to mention that little factoid to him about that the Mars funded researchings are they're simulating Mars station or I'm sorry NASA funded researchers are simulating the Mars space station there.
Get a little bit of background on that.
Yeah. How about this? Hawaii is the only US state that commercially grows coffee, cocoa, and vanilla beans. And here's a little other factoid. It can take up to 5 years to grow a single vanilla bean. Wow. You better enjoy vanilla. Takes that long. Man. How about this? The Aloha State. It's also growing. People. It's the biggest life expectancy. It's the highest life expectancy in the U.S. 81.3 years. Despite the fact that the people of Hawaii consume most spam per capita. The most spam per capita in the U.S. So that says something about spam. Highest life expectancy in the U.S. People could averagely live 81.3 years. You know why? Spam. I believe it's the spam.
It's got that special something.
It's got. I mean, I'm telling you right now. Eat more spam, you'll live to be 104. So, you can get spam everywhere, too. Everywhere. You can get spam at McDonald's. I wonder if it's called McSpam. Because you can, truly. You can at commercial chain fast food places in Hawaii, you can get spam. You get spam. They serve spam everywhere in Hawaii. I don't know why I don't live there.
Because
well,
a gallon of milk costs $10.
Yeah, gallon of milk, yeah, that's true. All right, why don't we take a break here? Here's the deal. You guys need to call right now because after the news, which is coming up next, we're going to get our first two callers, and they will be our two contestants for a round each of Know Your Onion. 312-981-7200. How well do you know the news? How well do you know the news that's not news? 312-981-7200. First two people will be our contestants for Know Your Onion. Tell the difference between a real news headline and an onion headline. And we'll do that after the news, which is after this. Welcome back, everybody. And we are live here in the Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and Steve Cochran at 6 with your morning drive. It is Wednesday, Wildcard Wednesday. You're your Wildcard Wednesday. Any artist, any song, anything? Who requested that?
That's coming to us from Greg H. in Buffalo Grove, a little Alan Parsons project.
Parsons project, yes. All right. Welcome back. How are you, everybody? We're going to get back to the things you might not know about Hawaii on this, the anniversary of the day that it became the 50th state. But before we get back to that, it is time once again. Every Wednesday morning after the 4:30 news, we do a game called Know Your Onion. Tom is your host, and this is the idea here. You get on the line with us. And when you play around, you have to figure out whether the news item or the news headline that Tom is reading to you is real, or if it is from The Onion, which is a fake comedy satirical newspaper. And it becomes increasingly more difficult every week in the real world to figure out whether these headlines are real or from The Onion. So your answer is real or The Onion. Tom, shall we do the intro and get the 60,000 people in the room?
It's time to Know Your Onion!
Oh, there it is. All 60,000 people are in here now.
It's shocking, really.
It's amazing how we get them all in here. So, all right, you got the idea. Let's get our first contestant on. And nobody, by the way, nobody goes home empty-handed. Well, you're already home, so you're not going to... So that, yeah. But you're not going to... You won't go home empty-handed. All right, let's go to our first contestant. This is Don on WGN. Don is in Huntley. Hi, Don.
Hey, Nick.
You know The Onion?
Yes.
Okay, so you have to decide whether or not the news items, the news headlines that Tom reads you are either real or The Onion. You got that?
Got it.
All right, good luck. Here we go. Tom.
All right, Don, let's do this. Get a little music going. Okay. So your first headline. Cosmopolitan magazine fires editor after learning she lied on her resume about having sex. Is that real or is that The Onion?
That's The Onion.
The Onion, you say. Let's see. Very good, Don.
Good job. You lied about having sex.
It's got to be on the resume for Cosmo.
It has to be. It has to be. It has to be. All right. And all right, so that's good. That's good, Don. You got to get a majority out of the five. So two more, and you're our first winner of the morning.
All right, here's your next headline. Hong Kong activists are using Tinder and Pokemon to evade... Sorry?
Stand by for a second.
Stand by for a second.
I'm at work.
Oh.
I didn't hear what you said.
All right, do it one more time.
Let me read it again. Hong Kong activists are using Tinder and Pokemon to evade Chinese authorities. Is that real or is that The Onion?
That's The Onion.
Let's see.
Oh. No, that's real. I it's hard to believe, but it is real. It's absolutely real.
I'll tell you, Don seems to be using us to avoid work.
That's right. All right. One for one, Don. You got to get. You still got to get two more. Here we go.
All right, Don, your next headline. St. Louis County Councilwoman sworn into office using a Dr. Seuss book. Is that real or is that The Onion?
Third time, The Onion.
Let's see. Oh, that's a very real headline.
That's crazy.
That's true.
It's crazy, but it's true. See, things just keep getting weirder in the real world. Okay, Don, you're down to your last two. You have to get these two correct in order to win, okay?
I got it.
All right.
Okay, here's your next headline. Drummer Pete Best reveals that he was also fired from The Who, Queen, Pink Floyd, and The Kinks before they all took off. Is that real or is that The Onion?
That's real.
Let's see.
No, God! No, God, please, no! 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 No!
That is The Onion.
That's The Onion. That's not real. Well, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Don. But you're not going to go away empty-handed. You did not win. You did not get the majority of the. By the way, the one time that you don't guess the onion, and it's the onion. Here's what you got. You got yourself a desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men. Visit AmericanWeathermakers.com for yours today. So you got yourself that desktop indoor weather station, Don. So you're not going home empty-handed, okay?
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay,
thank
take
you.
Care, Don. All right. And now, you know, here's Don's going to get fired now, but at least he will have the indoor weather station. Hang on, Don. Hang on, unless you can't get hang on because you're at work. Okay. All right. Well, that's our first one. That's our first one. Everybody get something.
Yeah.
Here's Linda, who's in Bloomington on WGN. Hi, Linda.
Hi. How are you?
All right. Are you familiar with The Onion?
Yeah. I listen to you guys all the time.
Oh, okay. All right. So you have to guess whether these news items are real or The Onion. Okay. That's your answer. Real or The Onion. Here we go.
Okay, Linda. Here comes your first headline. Here's a report. Little League pitchers could avoid overtaxing their arms by getting someone out. Is that real or is that The Onion?
That's The Onion.
Let's see.
Excellent!
Very good, Linda.
It's also very logical. It might be The Onion, but it's also very logical. When you get some outs and you won't have your arm, you know, you won't ruin your arm. All right, very good. You got one right, Linda.
All right, here's your next headline. The rock band Phish. Their concert campout was canceled due to plague-infected prairie dogs. Is that real or is that The Onion?
That's The Onion.
Let's see. No, that's very real.
That's absolutely real. I read that. I read that earlier, earlier this week. I saw it online, and I was like, "You got to be kidding me!" Do you know where it took place?
I don't have where it took place, but I know that it was reported that it was canceled due to an infection. Spreading among prairie dogs that if someone were to be bit,
yeah,
it would cause big problems, so they had to cancel it.
They had to cancel it. No fish because of dogs.
Yeah, prairie dogs.
Oh. No fish because of dogs. All right. All right. Linda, you got, you're 1-1. Okay? Let's see.
Okay, next one. A swastika ride was shut down by a German amusement park. Is that real or is that The Onion?
That's real.
Let's see. Very real.
Yeah.
Yes, a German amusement park had a ride where the two spinning portions of the ride looked a little bit too much like a swastika.
A swastika, and they closed it down.
Yeah, not a good look for Germany.
God. Not a good look for anybody.
No.
Wow. Okay, so Linda, you only need one more. If you get one more, you're a big winner this morning.
I'm awaiting.
Okay. All right, here we go. The final headline to see if we... Well, you got two more chances.
You got two chances, but you only need one.
Let's see if she can get this
one.
Jay-Z, hip-hop artist Jay-Z, pledges to make sure that Colin Kaepernick gets a contract at an NFL stadium shop. Is that real or is that The Onion?
That's an onion.
Let's see.
Woo-hoo!
Woo!
Yes, that is The Onion. Ah, Linda, nice job.
Very good.
Very good. You got the majority. You know, he reads you five. If you get three, you win, and you win. Linda, congratulations.
Thank you.
All right. You're going to get a Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnati's.com. Congratulations, Linda. Now you got to hang on, okay?
Okay.
Okay, there you go. Linda, hang on. Don, hang on, and we'll do it again next week. In the meantime, get to know your onion. So that's the big advice I can give you. It's just sometimes, you know, when we do this game, it really is kind of unbelievable what are real and what aren't, you know, these stories. It really is. Because there were at least two here that I thought were The Onion that were real. The weirdness will continue. Know Your Onion returns next Wednesday morning at 4:30 after the news. All right. We are going to take a break here for some weather, and then we will come back and we will wrap up the show with more things that you might not know about Hawaii, because on this date in 1959, it became the 50th state of the United States of America. So that's a lovely little anniversary. So we'll talk more about Hawaii coming up after this. And if you want to jump in with any comments or anything like that, 312-981-7200. Talk or text 312-981-7200.
Life goes on day after day. Hearts torn in every way. So ferry across the Mersey, 'cause this land's the place I love, and here I'll stay.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are wrapping up your Wild Card Wednesday. You've been Wild Card Wednesday. Now, who, pray tell, would request that?
That would come from Nick DiGilio, the elder.
That's right. My father. Yeah.
Some would say Nick DiGilio, the greater.
Well, I would say that. So there we go. And so that wraps up Wild Card Wednesday with my dad's request for... ferry across the Mersey. Hey, by the way, Dave Ennett's here, and he got here from the radio from the TV station. He has different clothing on, and I don't know how it happens. Dave is the magic man. Dave, as I've said before, I was telling people before that the song written by Hart was actually inspired by you.
Well, and I appreciate that. I like that.
Well, you look at it's magical. Thanks. How you get here from Bradley Place so quickly.
Have you got the makeup off already?
Yeah, look at that. You look fantastic.
Yeah.
You look fantastic. Oh.
Thanks. I don't feel fantastic, Nick.
Well, it's better to look good than to feel
that,
good.
Who said that?
That was Billy Crystal.
Yes.
Billy Crystal and when he played Fernando?
Fernando.
Yeah,
that's
Fernando. You look marvelous.
That's
right. Dave, you look great, and that was incredible incredible timing getting here from the TV station.
Thanks, Nick. I'm going to keep trying.
All right. Good old Dave Ennett is here, everybody. Hey, listen, coming up Steve Grzanich with the opening bell, and also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right, you want to know a little bit more about Hawaii?
Please.
Okay, they filmed a 3-part episode of Sanford and Son. All right, let's see. No matter how old you are or how long you've lived in the state, only people with Hawaiian ancestry are called Hawaiians. People of non-Hawaiian ancestry, even those born and raised there, call themselves locals. Ah, yes. And how about this? One Hawaiian, Thuridian growlator, is also known as the happy face spider. So it's a spider that has what it looks as though it looks like it has a happy face.
Ooh.
Don't all spiders look like they have happy faces, especially when they're poisoning you and killing you and wrapping you in webs so they could eat you later?
I was just thought they felt kind of bad about it. They're like, listen, it's nothing personal.
It's just what we do.
I'm a spider.
In Hawaii, no celebration is complete without a lei. Okay. So enjoy pulling that one out of the archives for Friday morning on Straight Out of Context. And the flower garlands come with strict rules. For starters, it's impolite to refuse a lei. This whole segment is going to be repeated on Friday. Did you know that? Tom, did you know it was impolite to refuse a lei?
Listen, I'll take any lei I can get.
Because really, who would say that? Hey, would you like a lei? No. What do you mean? What's wrong with you? Who doesn't want a lei? Remove it in front of the person who gave it to you, or wear one that you intend to give to someone else. Someone offers you a lei, you give it to somebody else. A lei should never be thrown away.
That was actually my motto in college.
I bet it was. Instead, it should traditionally be returned to the earth, ideally where its flowers were gathered. And it's bad luck to give a tied lei to a pregnant woman, as it suggests that the umbilical cord will be wrapped around the baby's neck.
Whoa, hold on.
What just got dark?
excuse me, did that, we just take a left turn?
What happened there? Where did that come from? Good Lord. Oh, my God. The state gem isn't a standard mineral. Black coral is technically an animal, but it is often used to make jewelry. Oh, I did not know that. How about this little factoid about Hawaii? The Aloha State is one of four that have outlawed billboards.
Rock on, dude.
Wow.
I like that.
The others? Are you ready for the others? The others that have outlawed billboards. So you can't have billboards that are outlawed in Hawaii and Alaska and Maine and Vermont. So if you visit any of those four states, you will not see billboards.
In addition, they have some of the tightest cigarette laws of any state.
Hawaii?
Yeah. There's a new bill that has called to raise the cigarette buying age to 30 and then subsequently 10 years, another 10 years every year after that. So you'd have to, it would go from 21 to 30 to 40 to 50 to 60. You have to be 60 years old to buy cigarettes.
So, and then do they reverse it at all, or does it go up to 80 and then 70 and then 80 and then 90 and 100?
Well, I'm guessing that let me see here. Each subsequent year and up to 100 by 2024. Now, this is a proposed bill.
That's not going to happen.
Well, you know, the people of Hawaii take conservation very seriously.
Yeah.
And the last thing they want is a ton of butts all over the ground.
That's still not going to happen.
Probably not. That seems to be a pretty big jump, but.
Here's a little factoid you might not know. Larry King is getting divorced for the seventh time.
Yeah. Saw that.
I just saw that on TV. Larry King is getting divorced for the seventh time.
Who was his first wife? Like Mary Magdalene or something?
He was, yeah.
He's that old.
Yeah. So, yeah, okay. Just that's big news, everybody. Larry King.
Well, The Rock just got surprise married in Hawaii.
Well, he's been with that woman for a while.
Right.
He's got a child with her and all that good stuff.
But they finally tied the knot.
It's his second wife.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. He's got like teenage kids with his first wife.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It's one of those deals where, you know, you make a certain amount of money and then you go, hey, I think we might need to get a divorce. That's all right, how about this? Snakes are also outlawed. The only legal serpents are housed in zoos. So you can't have a pet snake. So the only snakes in Hawaii are in zoos. Okay. And of course, when you picture a beautiful Hawaiian getaway, you might imagine a black or white beach, but they also come in yellow, red, and green. So very colorful beaches out there. So there's no snakes in Hawaii wild? Because it says snakes are outlawed. The only legal serpents are housed in zoos. So that means there's no snakes just snaking around in Hawaii?
I'd like to believe that there's a few snakes here and there.
Well, then they're breaking the law. They're outlaws.
Outlaw snakes.
That's right. That's The Rock's next movie, by the way. Outlaw snakes. Snake. All right, let's break here. And coming up is the news. Coming up tomorrow, by the way, Dan Feinberg is going to join us from The Hollywood Reporter for our biweekly visit to talk all things TV. Always a lot of TV to talk about with Dan, and also be Triple Play Thursday.